air, and it's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor but a desperate need for closure. How are you? Mark Riley, good morning to you.
How are you?
I'm all right, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I guess I'm all right. I feel better today that Brendan didn't bring in a cake.
Oh, yeah.
P.W. McDonald yesterday comes in at 4 in the morning with, I swear to God, it must have been half a double-layer cake, chocolate icing, vanilla, you know, the yellow cake. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, I've been, like, trying to be good, but the sugar thing killed me yesterday. It killed me.
It was wonderful, that cake, though.
Oh,
you got to admit, it was really good cake.
Yeah, wonderful. You know, that applies to the first hit, dude. I mean, tell me about, you know, wonderful was the first couple of spoonfuls, you know.
Why, not so, why does that end up being a drug reference, the first hit?
What
cake?
Else is it? What else is it? You know what I mean? I ate that cake. All right, I had a piece of it. I get down here. I hit the wall. Yesterday, I felt like I was drowning the entire morning because I'm fighting the sugar Jones and the sugar rush, and then the crash is sucking me into the hole. And then I get up there after the show. There's still no one. Why don't people just eat the cake? What do I got to be responsible for eating the rest of the cake for? So I get up there, I eat the rest of the cake, I got home, literally could not, I went into some sort of hypoglycemic coma.
Yeah.
I was in a diabetic coma for about an hour.
Really?
Yeah.
You crashed out though, huh?
I crashed out and had weird dreams about my wife. But I'm glad it was her.
Well, you know? I mean, there are worse things that could happen when you crash.
Oh, man. There's so many things happening right now, Riley. We got some people. We got some action people can take. It's time for a march. There will be a Fight for Democracy rally this Saturday, December 4th at 1 p.m. at the Ohio State House in Columbus, Ohio, to ensure that every vote is counted. Go to the links on morningsedition.com for details.
Yeah. Reverend Jesse Jackson is involved with that, as a matter of fact.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson has gone up there to help lead what is going to be hopefully a peaceful rally, in Ohio.
Yeah.
Other interesting stories. Afghanistan, at a resort that became a battlefield, Afghans teed off Friday in their country's first open golf tournament in more than 30 years. Four! Oh, I guess we missed one.
Is this fixed so Karzai wins? Is that the general idea?
But, you know, I just can't. Listen to this. There are no greens, all right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no grass. There's holes, but it's oiled sand.
What?
Yeah. And apparently there's like 40 guys who are trying to, you know, get into world competition in golf. And I get, it's a very weird, interesting sport that all of a sudden resurfaced in Afghanistan, isn't it?
I think it's amazing. Tiger's not there, though, right? No Ernie Els, no Vijay Singh.
Security remains a worry, particularly after the kidnapping of 3 UN workers this month who were thought to have been held in a nearby area. That's a pretty risky game of golf.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, who's playing?
I guess who's playing is they got all these young guys who are Afghanis who've been just waiting to do it. Apparently, you know, the guy who owns the place, was arrested, you know, after the communist takeover in the 70s and jailed for 6 months for having links with foreign diplomats who played the course. Like, guys would come in from out of town.
Out of town,
like,
right?
Let me show you a good time. I got a course. Drive him around. Go to jail. He was imprisoned again by the Taliban in the 90s for admitting he used to work with foreigners because he'd bring them to the golf club. It's a Kabul golf club. And apparently, with a green fee of $10 and an annual membership of about $160,
that's 7,500
Afghanis. That comes out to $160.
That's a low price, though. I mean, that's like the Walmart of golf courses.
Well, maybe you should join, Riley. Maybe you should take a couple of weeks.
No. I have studiously avoided ever playing golf, even when I smoke cigars, because a lot of cigar smokers play golf for some unexplained reason. But no, I don't golf. I don't like riding around in carts. I don't like walking from green to green.
Uh-huh.
Forget about it.
Yeah, so, Peter Bergen, our popular guest of ours.
Oh, yeah.
He likes to go to Afghanistan to vacation. It's the Kabul Golf Club, if anyone's interested. I doubt they have a website yet or whether the resort's built. But,
The clubhouse is under construction.
So I'll tell you, I'm like you. I never was a golf guy. I know guys that are into it. They think it's the greatest thing in the world. I just never got it. You know, I just never understood it. But I never went out there and tried either. I used to go to a driving range, but just to take out aggression. And I had no patience for that. So I can't imagine I would have patience for the long haul.
They say that it's calming and that it's a relaxing thing to do. I've never quite seen it myself. Plus, I swing left-handed, which mm-hmm. meant that, you know, when you go to one of those miniature places, they never have left-handed clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, what am I supposed to do? So I ended up sitting off to the side most of the
time. You swing left-handed?
Yeah, I swing.
Do you play guitar left-handed as well?
No.
No?
No, I don't play guitar left-handed, but I used to bat in baseball. I do everything else with my right hand, but I used to bat left-handed.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. Different. Well, my dad was the exact opposite. My dad wrote left-handed and did a bunch of things left-handed, but he came up during a time when they forced you to do stuff right-handed.
They tried to break you the habit. Break
yeah,
the habit.
They'd literally tie his left hand behind his back. So he ended up doing a lot of things right-handed and then some things naturally left-handed.
Here's another story out of Quakertown, Pennsylvania.
Uh-oh.
After 24 years of community service, the Quakertown Optimist Club is calling it quits.
Really?
They're holding their last meeting on Thursday, citing declining interest.
Is that because of the presidential election?
They quote the president, Bernard Kinsky, said, "I feel sad."
Oh, no longer optimistic, no longer need for a club.
Well, apparently they had like 35 members, and then it drizzled down to, it just drifted down to like 15 members. Like, just like another guy left. How are we going to maintain our disposition if people keep leaving? How are we going to bring people's spirits up? Maybe the glass isn't half full, you guys.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not.
Gray skies will never clear up.
My glass is half empty. I got to go. I'm not right for this club anymore.
From Quakertown, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, they used to do things like, you know, run around trying to make people feel better about stuff. The group worked with schools to hold essay, spelling, and public speaking contests for students. Sponsored a youth bowling league. And
noble stuff.
Organized golf tournaments
really?
In Afghanistan, which is weird.
Oh, now see.
And football and basketball events.
Wow.
Isn't that sad, though? The Optimist Club. What a sad day. That's
a sad day for the youth of Quakertown. Who's going to pick up the slack there?
I'm assuming that the youth of Quakertown probably was trying to detach itself from the Optimist Club for a few years.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, this sounds like such a great sort of plot for a movie for one of those Jim Taylor, Julian, or what's his name, Alexander Payne movies, like Sideways. Just like it could be a sidebar in one of their films where the Optimist Club has started to dwindle in its.
I want to go see that. I haven't been to the movies in ages, but I do want to see Sideways.
Oh, yeah?
Because there is, I think, that I saw a trailer for it, and there's a woman in it, a Chinese woman, I think, named Sandra Oh.
Mm-hmm.
She's
real good.
Yeah, she is. She's really a fine actress.
You know, we were trying to get my dad. I called my dad last night. My dad's birthday is today. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Dr. Marin.
Yeah, that's very nice. Yeah, happy birthday, Dad. But no thanks for not doing the movie reviews. Like, you know, we had to
be backed out?
We had the big conversation last night about the movies.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, can we do this tomorrow and we'll tape it? He's like, I don't want to do the tape anymore. I'm like, why not? He's like, I just want to talk to you. And so now.
Not to America?
Yeah, we're going to wait a couple of weeks and sneak up on him again and see if we can, you know, snag another movie. But I can't paraphrase him. He, what did he say? Oh, he went to see the Cranks? What is
Cranks.
It? The Cranks?
Yeah.
Christmas with the Cranks because his
wife. Is that the one with Jamie Lee Curtis in it?
Yeah, his wife wanted to bring the kids to the grandkids. And he says, I didn't like it. It's a slapstick. And what the hell is that woman's name? He says, the one whose father is an actor, comedian guy, Curtis, Jamie Lee Curtis. She looked too matronly. I felt sorry for her. She looked so matronly. It was sad. See, I'm paraphrasing you, Pop, so maybe you got to get back on the phone so you can do yourself justice.
Hey, maybe we should get some of our listeners to call the email, not the email, the voicemail number.
Yeah.
And you know, make a plea. The listeners make a plea for your dad to pick up the movie reviews.
If I can't make a plea, you know, what are you... We got to start playing those. They got to call that line. Go to morningsedition.com if you want to leave us a message. Also, there's a lot of stuff going on in Iraq. We've got a great show today. Mick Ware is actually...
Mick Ware!
...coming to the studio. We're big fans of his. It's almost like a Mick Ware fan club. P.W. McDonald and Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, walk around doing impressions of this guy.
Yeah.
He's Times Baghdad bureau chief. He's going to be here in the second hour. So we're going to come back and talk about Iraq because there's a lot of stuff out of Iraq today, a lot of speculation, and there was a new report released by the Department of Defense, which is very indicting. It's 15 past the hour. We'll get into that when we come back. Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. It's not Marxism. It's Marxism. Mark Maron and Mark Riley every morning on Air America Radio.
Larry King here with a timely message. These days, keeping my immune system strong is more important than ever. That's why I believe in getting more from my vitamin C, the advanced protection of Ester C. Advanced because Ester C is the only vitamin C with metabolites. Advanced because it's already in a form my body can use. So do what I do and help your immune system face the challenge. Get the advanced protection of Ester C. Are you getting advanced protection from your vitamin C?
Look for Ester C at Kmart, Kroger, and everywhere vitamins are sold.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It was the single largest loss of life from an enemy attack on American soil. It was also the biggest intelligence failure in the history of the United States. Critics are calling it one of the most important documents of the modern era, a must for anyone who wants to know the truth about 9/11, a riveting read that will alter the course of history. Could 9/11 have been prevented? For the first time, access documents, interviews, transcripts, and previously unreleased material. Learn why the highest levels of government ignored repeated warnings by the head of counterterrorism, how a presidential memo warning of terrorist hijackings went unheeded just 2 months before the attack. You've heard the rumors, now get the facts. Call us right now.
Toll free. 1-800-590-3488. Get the facts you deserve to know. 1-800-590-3488. The 9/11 Commission reports you must have. Call us today. 1-800-590-3488. That's 1-800-590-3488.
It's live. The NBA on Sirius. For game time, log on to Sirius.com or call 877-33-SIRIUS.
What do you do when your teenager is disrespectful to your spouse? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. Your daughter says, "I hate you. You're the worst mom in the world." Or she lets a few choice words fly at your husband. What do you do? Well, you can just ignore it and let your spouse and child work it out. But what kind of message does that send to your child? They need to see a unified mom and dad. Parents who support each other with words and actions. If you don't like the way your spouse handled or treated your child, talk it out privately. Otherwise, send a clear, firm, and unified message to your child. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find out about ways you can build a stronger family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. Basketball great Charles Barkley.
I got a little pop quiz for you. What do I have a hard time keeping shut? And what is my nickname? And now I got one for you. Do you know your kid's principal's nickname?
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
You can have 20 million people around you all the time. When you don't have love for yourself, you're lonely.
Mary J. Blige, recording artist.
Drugs used to make me feel no pain at all. Once the feeling is gone, you're back to feeling like you're nobody. Love starts from inside you. I just accepted who I was. I accepted Mary. That fills the loneliness. When you really love you, it's a way of healing.
A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Conservation International applies innovations in science, economics, policy, and community participation to protect the Earth's richest natural regions. Their objective is to conserve plant and animal diversity in major tropical wilderness areas and key marine ecosystems. With headquarters in Washington, D.C., CI works in more than 30 countries on four continents. For more information about CI's programs, please visit www.conservation.org.
Hour. It's Morning's Edition. I am Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
The Kabul Golf Club is open. Are you sure it's okay for me to just put the tee right?
Oh,
not again.
Another Linkster in Kingdom Come.
Well, it says right here, the club was forced to close because of the fighting, and when the Taliban swept to power, all hope of playing golf, which the hardline Islamic regime associated with wealthy Western diplomats was lost. It reopened this year, but only after it was thoroughly checked for mines and other unexploded ordnance.
Ordnance. I knew you were going to say ordnance.
Ordnance. It's a hole in...
It's just a hole.
Damn. Not again. Now I got to get a new ball, a new cart.
And a new arm.
Yowza. Hey, so here's what's going on. First of all, Al-Zawahiri, Bin Laden's right-hand man, released a tape. You can get the whole library of Bin Laden's Zawahiri tapes from the Al Jazeera library.
Yes.
If you want it. It's like a 25-tape box set. Very uplifting for a certain type of person. But also very interesting if you want to study it. That's available through Time Life edition tapes. I'm blabbing
on. You better stop.
People be like, how do I get it? How do I get the tape? I've concluded that Bin Laden's cave is actually in the basement of the White House. That they just send a guy down. It's like, because I was thinking to myself, where's it? Where, how come we haven't heard from? It's been a month since the elections. Where's the terrorism? Bam, here it is.
Here
he
is.
Wake up, America. So what do you have to say, Riley?
Quote: you have to choose between one of two methods to deal with Muslims, either on mutual respect and exchange of interests, or to deal with them as if they are spoils of war. This is your problem, and you have to choose yourself. You have to realize that we are a nation of patience and endurance. We will stand firm to fight you with God's help until doomsday. And this sounds like probably the most diplomatic stuff we've heard out of these terrorists.
Yeah, out of Bin Laden and Al-Zawahiri.
Yeah, they seem to be... I won't say softening their stand. Obviously, they're talking about fighting here, but they do seem to be trying to say to people, well, you know, we're reasonable people. We'll sit up and talk. But then, you know, you read Thomas Friedman in the Times the other day.
Yeah.
And he says something that is absolutely profound in this piece. This was in the Sunday Times.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a quote from Thomas Friedman's column. We are losing a public relations war in the Muslim world to people sawing off the heads of other Muslims.
Right.
That's something to think about.
Well, he also brought attention, as did this new report out of the Department of Defense, which is...
Defense Science Board. Yeah, that's...
Defense Science Board. Is that the spin here, you know, that most Americans have received is the idea... That, you know, Muslims hate our freedoms, you know, which is, you know, it's just, you know, it's Orwellian. It's
Bushian is what it is. Yeah.
That's a Bushism.
Yeah.
No longer are the cute little malapropes. Is that what you call those? Slips of the tongue and whatnot. That's not Bushism. Bushisms are, you know, casualties in Iraq and out and out lies and spin to justify the neocon death cult murdering murder spree. So here's what they say in this Defense Department, Defense Science Board report. Muslims do not hate our freedom, but rather they hate our policies. The overwhelming majority voice their objections to what they see as one-sided support in favor of Israel and against Palestinian rights, and the long-standing, even increasing support for what Muslims collectively see as tyrannies, most notably Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Pakistan, and the Gulf states. Thus, when American public diplomacy talks about bringing democracy to Islamic societies, this is seen as no more than self-serving hypocrisy.
Yep.
And that's from a Department of Defense report.
Defense Science Board. Now, this is not Students for a Democratic Society that wrote this report. The current board, according to Disinfopedia, is authorized to consist of 32 members plus 7 ex officio members, the chairman of the Army, Navy, Air Force Policy, Ballistic Missile Defense Advisory Committee, and Defense Intelligence Agency Science and Technology Advisory Committee. Members whose appointed terms range from 1 to 4 years are selected on the basis of their preeminence in the fields of science, technology, and its application to military operations, research, engineering, manufacturing, and acquisition process.
It's interesting what they're saying here, and if Al-Qaeda, you know, it's obviously a threat of some sort. You know, it doesn't seem specific, but as you said, it's a little more diplomatic than most of the threats we've seen, which was out and out, you know.
We will kill you.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know whether or not they're trying to appeal to more moderate Muslims, or trying to appeal to the international community somehow, or trying to initiate the idea that they can play on the global stage in what's going to be an evolving diplomatic sense. But certainly that's not going to happen from this administration's end, and I'm not sure it should happen.
No, no. And see, what we're starting to understand, Mark, and I'm starting to realize it when you do a little reading, and it's a common thread that runs through what's going on in the Middle East and what's going on in the Ukraine, and that is that Americans are generally, and I include myself in this, woefully ignorant about the rest of the world. We have no clue what drives Muslims in Iraq or what drives Ukrainians.
Well, that's what's great about, yeah, absolutely. And that's what's amazing about this this Friedman piece, is that he basically says not only can he not see as a reporter who's running the war in Iraq and that the chaos is there, but the idea that, you know, they could set up a democracy, and by, you know, the comparison he makes to the toppling of Saddam statue, to the toppling of the Berlin Wall, is that it's really nothing like that, because in Berlin, the wall, you know, was just standing there. And when they brought the wall down, they were used to, they had a history of democratic function, you know, that of civilized society. But, you know, in this part of the world, it's a lot of tribalism. It has nothing to do with democracy. It has had everything to do with tyranny and family bonds. And now the imposition of this structure through violence is just not taking.
Not only that, it's that people don't realize that Iraqis, some of them, I'm not going to say all of them, but many Iraqis have a problem with democracy because it's America that's trying to impose it.
Right.
You know, we kind of, you know, project ourselves as being these bringers of, you know, better times. But to the Iraqis, we put them out of work. We've taken away their electricity, their sewage system, their fresh water. We've killed thousands of their civilian population. I'm talking about innocents now, not insurgents. Maybe the Iraqis don't have a problem with Americans killing insurgents, but that's not all American the American presence is doing there.
Obviously, yeah.
So they got a different view.
Absolutely, and here's what I could, and we'll come back with more of this. War, this is from Friedman's piece. Wars are fought for political ends. Soldiers can only do so much. And the last mile in every war is about claiming the political fruits. The bad guys in Iraq can lose every mile on every road, but if they beat America on the last mile because they're able to intimidate better than America is able to coordinate, protect, inform, and invest and motivate, they will win and America will lose. That's pretty frightening stuff. And the death toll is pretty high this month, almost the highest of the
since
whole
April.
War.
Yeah, 133.
So we're going to stay in this, Riley.
We're going to stay in this. Hold up. Guy called himself James.
All right, well, maybe he's got the Palm Pilot.
Yes. Yeah. So we'll get that. We got the liberal agenda. We got more on this war. And, of course, next hour, Mick Ware, Time Magazine's Baghdad Bureau Chief, joins us here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
You can burn a few calories with this brain teaser from Cortislim. What do Stamford, Connecticut, Burbank, California, and the Cortislim lifestyle have in common? Here to tell us is Dr. Greg.
Well, the connection is that those cities each have a population of over 100,000 people. So, hypothetically, you might say that the entire population of, say, Abilene, Texas, not only ordered Cortislim one time, but ordered Cortislim again. And that doesn't surprise us at all, because over 100,000 reorders tells you that the Cortislim lifestyle, and that's managing everyday stress to create positive change, including your weight, along with proper diet, exercise, and Cortislim, well, it's working.
So when you hear that the number of customers who've reordered Cortislim is roughly equal to the entire population of Green Bay, ask yourself, wouldn't you be more comfortable stepping off the scale and into the Cortislim lifestyle this holiday season? It's as easy as calling 1-800-921-BURN. That's 800-921-BURN. Once again, 800-921-BURN.
It's live. The NBA on Sirius. For game time, log on to Sirius.com or call 877-33-SIRIUS.
Hey, this is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Suzanne's account has been debited without her permission. I'll help her fix this after this.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Suzanne noticed something about her checking account.
I noticed a bank draft that was taken out for $139. I called my bank. It was a pharmacycards.com. I called the company, and she said that a pharmacy card was sent to us. We had 5 days to return it. Since we didn't return it, they debited our account.
How did they get your account?
She said, well, they must have gotten it from one of their business partners.
Well, tell her you're going to sue her for $10 million unless the money is in the account within 24 hours because you're a thief, and I'm getting ready to turn you over to the Federal Trade Commission. Jump all over them. But, yeah, I mean, you just need to jump their case and probably have the bank put a stop payment on it because of fraud.
Bank said that there's nothing they can do. They can't flag my account.
Well, tell them we're going to close your account. Bank someplace else if you guys can't do anything about it. It needs to just be a block put on your account for this company. That's what you've got to go to.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
And we go live now to Andy in the Air and our traffic chopper with today's traffic report.
Thanks, Todd. Traffic is moving smoothly eastbound on Route 1. No delays there. Moderate congestion at exit 17 northbound on the parkway. Expect a 15-minute delay. And there are heavy, heavy delays on the southbound thruway between exit 2 and exit 8 near the shopping center.
Can you see what's going on down there, Andy?
Well, there looks to be an overturned, oversized belly in the right lane. Extremely large, blocking all traffic.
I'm sorry. I don't have a great connection here. Did you say belly?
That's right, Todd, and a rather large one at that. It looks as if someone lost it from walking across the shopping center parking lot to the stores.
Well, there you have it. Heavy congestion due to a heavy belly. Stay tuned for another belly update at the top of the hour.
Small step number 43. Park further from the store and walk. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
They're in your bathroom cabinet, under the kitchen sink, in your garage. They're ordinary household products that kids as young as 10 sniff to get high. What these kids don't know is that sniffing can cause instant death. Talk to your kids. Know where they're going, who they're with, and what they're doing. If you know what your kids are up to, they're much less likely to sniff inhalants. Awareness. The anti-drug.
Learning water safety is just one way you can make your family and your community safer. Your local Red Cross also offers training in other life-saving skills, like first aid, CPR, and AED. When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. Sign up for a class today at your local American Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org for more information.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Yes.
Kabul Golf Club is finally open. My ball's in a trap of the sand course. Wait, I think I can... Sorry.
You better pray there are no golfers listening at this hour. You know, they're going to be emailing and morningsedition.com-ing and all over the
place.
Are
they flocking to the Kabul Golf? It's extreme golf.
Yeah, right. You lose, you really
lose. You never
know
what's going to happen. Four... I love doing that. So we're in the middle of things here. Here's the, by the way, I'm at Seattle. I'll be in Giggles, at Giggles, Friday and Saturday night for four shows. GigglesComedyClub.com. Please come down. Have some fun. It'll be exciting. It'll be strange. It'll be weird. It'll be funny.
Yep.
I have to say funny at
funny.
The end of all those things.
And we're going to Boston, too, in another week.
Next Friday, we're going up to Somerville. That should be very exciting to go back to Boston, where I lived for 7 years but never go back to. But you're right. The guy who brought this by was wearing a navy blazer that had a crest on it, called himself Sir James.
Yes.
I don't know what that's about. Here's the president's schedule for today from his Palm Pilot. 6 a.m., wake up, prepare for trip to Canada. Note, it will be chilly up there, and the weather could be cold, too. 8 a.m., greet dignitaries. Note, assure Canadians that the only reason I picked Mexico as the first country I visited as president was because I speak their language, and Canadian is so difficult. 10 a.m., discuss security along the U.S.-Canada border, inform them that on a clear day we can hear the French-inflected heckling as far as south as Wyoming. 11 a.m. Discuss... Is that music loud enough in your head, Riley?
Yeah.
It is, all right.
Yeah.
Discuss war on terror. Note, tell Canadians if they send troops to Iraq, they can have Maine. 12 a.m. Discuss trade issues. Tell officials that we keep supplying Canada with M&M CDs, but it's been several years since they sent us a new album from Loverboy. Note, tell them they can take back Nickelback. 1 p.m. Impromptu visit with average Canadians. Note, tell people shoveling their walk that everyone used to call me the snowblower. A snowblower. 4 p.m. Meet with Canadian Film Commission. Suggest that Toronto be used as stand-in for New York in real life. 10 p.m. Bedtime. Take cheap local prescription sleep aid to drown out protesters. It's raining Valium. It's raining Prozac in Canada. That's the feeling we all get when you hear about just, you can get, you know, in Mexico, you can get just about anything without a prescription. And if you go to Canada, everything's much cheaper.
Well, yeah.
We all know that. You just get the feeling that you go up there and you just, there's just bowls on the street filled with antidepressants and important pain medication and things that make people feel better. You mean I can just take a handful?
Sure. Sure. Go ahead. Not a problem.
Have some. So we are back in this, we are back in the thick of the war here. And apparently the, Iraq death toll this month is climbing to the highest level it has been since April. There at least 133 U.S. troops have died in Iraq so far this month, which is awful.
Yeah.
And the interesting, the horrible thing, it's not interesting, that's a bad word, is that apparently there's, for these elections, it's becoming progressively clear that there's no way that the American forces can count on the Iraqi National Guard. In a lot of situations.
And rightly so, since one of the targets of the insurgents is people that they perceive to be collaborators with the Americans. And who do they hit first? The Iraqi national security people.
Right, and they're doing some old-school guerrilla gangster stuff. They're threatening people's families. They're killing people's friends. They're putting them in the streets, laying them. They don't sleep with the fishes. They sleep right in the streets without a head.
Without a head, yes.
In front of your house.
And they've got these IEDs, as the U.S. military calls them, improvised explosive devices. They have taken this to another level, Mark Maron. This is, in fact, the definition of guerrilla war.
Yeah.
And remember that guerrilla wars are, provide a huge advantage to the people on whose turf the war is fought.
Yeah.
Okay? So, in other words, if Americans were involved in a guerrilla war here in New York, we'd have the advantage against anybody that was coming here trying to subdue us. Well, we're over there. And the insurgents have the advantage because it's their land, it's their turf, it's their country.
Well, it's close to something similar, I think, that happened in Vietnam a lot, was that they just couldn't identify the enemy, and now they can't identify whether or not the enemy resides in the Iraqi National Guard that they're counting on. I mean, it says here that there was they have serious problems with loyalty and competence. I mean, just a few months ago it says he believes, this was being quoted, Lieutenant Colonel Justin Gubler, he believes the local National Guard force was complicit in the abduction and killing of its own battalion commander west of Fallujah. And they took all the arms and they put them into the hands of the insurgents.
Of the insurgents,
and
yeah.
Also, the attitude about this, the Iraqi National Guard on some level, apparently there was 150 new Iraqi police recruits were due to arrive by helicopter at an American base at 9 p.m. Or in military parlance, 2,100 hours. I'm quoting the colonel here. I'm quoting Major Dan Wisenight. He said, 2,100 clown car arrives.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure that they're calling all of those transport vehicles. I like the image because clowns in reference to the Iraqi police recruits, it's sort of harsh, but apparently there's just not a lot of faith there.
No, the American military does not have much, if any, faith in most of the Iraqi military. And remember that it's the Iraqi military that is going to have to be at least partly responsible for the conduct of this election. And by the way, Mark, we're hearing now that they're going to increase troop strength, not by bringing in more troops, but by keeping more of them there as they rotate more in, to about 150,000 from 138,000 just for the election.
To try and secure these elections.
Yeah. And see, this is the revealing thing about that Defense Science Board thing. On the one hand, and the piece that Thomas Friedman wrote, on the one hand, the American military and superstructure doesn't seem to have anybody in charge of exactly what's going on in Iraq, and they're fighting an enemy that is extremely decentralized. There is no insurgent high command. There is no, you know, one palace that they all hang out in or one place where they all congregate to meet.
Yeah, well, they're trying to make it seem like Fallujah was a stronghold, which it was. But it didn't seem to, you know, it didn't solve any real problems, most likely. We'll talk to Michael Ware when he comes in about this stuff specifically.
Yeah.
And also, it seems to me that they're trying to incorporate, they're going to have to placate a lot of different groups in order to have these elections even, you know, rudimentally functioning. You know, like, if that's a word I can use. Like,
no, that's a correct word.
They're literally trying to, you know, integrate, you know, al-Sadr's contingent into a, you know, we haven't heard about him much lately because he's trying to be integrated into the political landscape of Iraq in a legitimate way.
Yeah, he has decided to get involved in the political process, I would imagine, at the behest of Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, who was the most powerful Shiite cleric. And, you know, al-Sadr has a very strong following, but he is not by any means the most powerful Shiite cleric. That would be Sistani.
I also think that on some level, the reason why we're seeing such diplomatic, or as diplomatic as they can be, for al-Qaeda messages from bin Laden and al-Zawahiri is that they see that, you know, that rebels are being incorporated into the political landscape in these, you know, growing Muslim, this, I mean, they're hoping that, you know, there will be some sort of democratic balance in the elections in Iraq, but who knows what's going to happen. And obviously al-Zarqawi is a terrorist and he's blowing things up and he's the enemy of everybody. But, you know, he is in alliance with, you know, with nationalists and with other Muslims who are against the American forces. So I think that they're trying to play some sort of strange diplomatic card in the Muslim world to get them, you know, credibility as people that are willing to work with other people.
Well, yeah, and al-Sadr has been very, very low-key. If you notice, there hasn't been a lot of press here about his activities over the last 2 or 3 months.
They're trying to clean up his image because this is one of those people that was an enemy of the United States who is clearly in interest of the Iraqi government going to be integrated in, so they had to disarm his outlaw status.
Status, yeah, because remember, there was a murder warrant out for him. But see, Sistani is playing a very interesting game here.
Mm-hmm.
Sistani is pushing very, very hard for the elections to take place on January 30th. Why? Because Sistani knows that 60% of Iraq are Shiites. And he figures, in any fair election, the Shiites are going to dominate.
Right.
They're going to end up dominating. Now, the Sunnis, on the other hand, don't want to see this election take place because they fear, even though they were the dominant party. Remember that Saddam was a Sunni, or is a Sunni.
Yeah.
They're afraid that if the Shiites do control the government, that the first thing they're going to do is take revenge for whatever outrages they feel the Sunnis have visited on them over all these years.
Right.
And then you've got the third force. You've got the Kurds in the north who are sitting back watching all of this saying, wait, we want a role in this too.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure that our, you know, whatever autonomous status we have is maintained.
And then you've had this this sort of like renegade jihadist insurgency, and it's not even clear completely what they want. And we'll ask Mick Ware about that.
Yeah, absolutely, because Mick has been there. He's been in the middle of all of that fighting. He has seen what there is to see in Iraq. So I'm going to talk to him about that.
I can't wait. And when we come back, some interesting numbers from a poll about what Americans feel about Roe v. Wade and whether or not it should stay or it should go. You know, this is sort of like, the myth of moral issues in this country and the dominance they have culturally. It's propaganda by the Christo-fascists. We'll be back 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hey, want a t-shirt with me and Riley on it? Go to MorningSedition.com to check out our full line of Morning Sedition merchandise.
By now you've heard that Canadian prescription drug prices are up to 85% less expensive than they are in the U.S. Marge Burns heard and ordered her Zocor and saved $60 on a 90-day supply. Charlie Sumner heard and saved $35 on his Lipitor. If you are buying any prescription medication, it's time to call Advocare at 1-888-471-4721. AARP Magazine ranked Advocare one of the top pharmacies in Canada. In fact, the state government of Illinois has visited Advocare's facility and concluded that their procedures are exceeding the United States government's requirements. And now you too can save by calling Advocare at 1-888-471-4721 or visit their website at pharmacyonthenet.com. Your medications are delivered right to your door and you save up to 85%. It's so easy and the money you will save is incredible. Don't pay higher prices just because you live in the U.S. Call 1-888-471-4721 or log on to pharmacyonthenet.com.
Until recently, men have had only two options to improve their performance in the bedroom. Take a prescription drug that works quickly but only lasts for a few hours, or take a natural supplement that can take up to 4 weeks to work. But now there's a new option. In a recent medically supervised anecdotal study, over 96% of the participants who took Proton Extreme reported an increase in libido and erectile strength. Each participant was given a one-week supply. Some of the younger men had a response in just a few hours, others in just a few days. Regardless of your age, if you want to boost your libido quickly and naturally, then take the Proton test yourself. Results are guaranteed.
Call now for your risk-free supply. 1-800-399-6763. That's 1-800-399-6763. 9 out of 10 men have success with Proton. Now it's your turn. Call 1-800-399-6763. Again, 1-800-399-6763.
Obviously a fan. What do you like best about Howard's show?
The Sirius Satellite.
He doesn't give a beep!
Freedom of speech.
He can say what he wants, do what he wants.
No censorship.
Everyone knows it's Howie.
Are you happy about Howard's jump to Sirius Satellite?
Yeah, definitely. I can't wait for Uncensored.
Sirius rules.
Howard's the best. And anytime I can hear him uncensored, I'm there.
We'll finally do the show that he's wanted to. Everyone knows it's Howie.
I can't wait. It's going to be great.
How do you teach conversation skills to a toddler? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. Start by kneeling down and making eye contact with your young child. Limit the amount of words you use and keep the message simple. Allow your toddler enough time to respond to what you've just said. Keep in mind that during these early years, you're teaching far more than word recognition. You're actually modeling for your toddler proper ways to communicate with future teachers, peers, employers, and perhaps their own family one day. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find out about ways you can build a stronger family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net. Or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
Hello, this is Mandy Patinkin for Choice Magazine Listening, a free service of the nonprofit Lucerna Fund. If you cannot read because of blindness or other impairment, we'll send you selections from leading magazines on special speed cassettes. So for 8 hours of memorable writing every other month, completely free of charge, call 516-883-8280 or write Listening, Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050. That's 516-883-8280.
Are you in the car right now with your kids? Sounds like the perfect time to ask them about the drug ecstasy. Go on, ask them. You have time right now to ask them. Think there's a better time? Maybe when you can sit down and have the talk? Aren't you sitting right now? The time to have the talk is right now. Lock the doors if you have to, because they're sitting right there. Go on, ask your kids about ecstasy. Right now. If you don't do it now, do you think you ever will? Ask your kids about E right now. Then go to AskYourKidsAboutE.com.
Floods and flash floods can strike almost anywhere. Many people don't know that the severe damage to homes and property caused by floodwaters is not covered by homeowners insurance. Protect yourself and your family from catastrophic financial loss due to flood damage. Learn more about the National Flood Insurance Program by calling 1-800-427-4661. 1-800-427-4661. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
Past the hour, it's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
The Kabul Golf Club is open for business. Hey, I think maybe I just get, why don't you hand me the 5-iron? Oh, I need a new caddy. Anyways, here we go. Listen, if you're in Ohio, there's something you can do. You can go to morningsedition.com and find information about this Saturday, December 4th at 1 p.m. at the Ohio State House in Columbus, Ohio. That is at High Street and Broad Street. There is a Fight for Democracy rally. They are going to be protesting the election. in terms of Franklin County, Lake County, Mahoning County. They're asking for a recount. They are voicing Jesse Jackson is going to be there. A lot of people are going to converge on the State House to try and get these counties investigated in terms of the several different types of shenanigans that went on. The most practical of which, in terms of, you know, understaffed election places in black neighborhoods where people had to wait online 5 or 6 hours, deterring people. There were some miscounts, apparently, and you can take action if you're in Ohio by going to that. And you can also, of course, go to blackboxvoting.org to find out the status of any number of things relating to the elections, this last year's elections. Hopefully, as John Kerry said, on his website, you know, we will move towards a federalized election system that certainly at least will, you know, get rid of some of these paperless machines and also, you know, properly staff all voting locations. I will be in Seattle this weekend, Friday and Saturday at Giggles Comedy Club, gigglescomedyclub.com. If you're interested in that, we have Mick Ware coming up. We have a lot of things going on. But right now, I don't have a comedy piece to do. No, I don't. Right now, it is interesting. A majority of Americans say President Bush's next choice for an opening on the Supreme Court should be willing to uphold the landmark court decision protecting abortion rights, the Roe v. Wade decision. The poll found that 59% say Bush should choose a nominee who would uphold the 1973 decision. Now, see, this is the myth in this country right now. Obviously, there is a renegade, sort of a radical, extremist group of fundamentalist Christians that want to run the country, that want to dictate the laws of the country, that want a complete, connection or collusion between church and state, and are shameless about this fascistic intent. And it's very heartening to know that most of what we're hearing vis-a-vis the administration and also the news outlets and also, you know, how people are spinning the vote is propaganda. This is not a majority in this country. This is a minority, but they are very ambitious and, you know, they are able to do the grassroots work that is necessary to change local government. They are out there doing that, but they are by no means representing the majority of this country, because 59% want, they are basically voting for human rights.
Well, Mark, what's interesting is that 59% runs across virtually every demographic group, men, women, most of the age demographics, income groups, and people living in urban, suburban, and rural areas. So, I mean, we're the only one group, as you very correctly point out, that stands steadfastly opposed is fewer than half of Republicans, evangelicals, and those over 65.
Right.
Say they favor. Now, mind you, they were not asked specifically about Roe v. Wade. What they were asked was what kind of Supreme Court justice should be appointed. And would they, you know, would they support or oppose someone who supported Roe v. Wade? So that's a very, very clear, and it's certainly a clearer majority than George W. Bush got in the election.
Mm-hmm.
So people want to see a judge who is going to uphold a woman's right to choose.
Yeah, and for people who don't, like, I was told recently, we talked about this yesterday, I got an email here that I want to read to. It's, you know, nobody ever wants to get an abortion. An abortion is not an easy thing for anybody to decide to do or have to do in any given situation, but it should be up to that person to make a decision over their own reproductive freedom.
Yes.
They should have the freedom to do that. Somebody sent that in. I like that. Reproductive freedom. It's an individual human right.
Yes.
You know, there is a slippery slope here, you know, in terms of the type of laws that, or the lawsuits that have been defining. You know, there's a slow sort of slippage towards defining the unborn fetus as an individual in terms of that law. If
the defense of woman, one that makes attacking a woman who's pregnant a crime because you're attacking a second life.
Yeah. Right. You know, so there is a fight going on, but it needs to stay. People need to have the safety and the support to do what they choose to do with their own body.
Yeah, but you know what else? They need to understand that the slippery slope actually exists. Because there are people, for example, there's been polling that says that people oppose, quote, partial birth abortion.
Yeah.
Okay, as defined, of course, by the religious right. Because most Americans have no clue exactly what the definition of partial birth abortion is.
It's a fairly rare form of
extremely rare procedure. Yeah. Extremely rare procedure does not happen often at all.
And they use it for their propaganda purposes. All those horrendous pictures that these people, you know, trot around of fetus parts are primarily from partial birth abortions,
yeah.
Which is not even, you know, that.
Actually, we probably shouldn't even call it partial birth abortion. Mm-hmm. That, again, is a definition of the religious right. But, and in 90-some-odd percent of the cases where this procedure is done, by the way, it is done for the health of the mother.
Medical emergency.
Yeah, it's a medical emergency. It's not like, it's, you know, people skip in a couple of days before they're due to go to, you know, to the hospital and say, hey, I want an abortion. That's not what it is, but that's how it's been defined. And in many cases, people feel as though they can, you know, they can support reproductive freedom, but on the other hand, say, well, I'm, you know, I think that a teenager should have to tell their parents, or I'm opposed to partial birth, so that those slippery slopes they don't see as necessarily being something that's eventually going to completely chip away at Roe versus Wade.
Which it will.
Of course it will.
Especially because this particular faction of our culture is so mobilized to dictate how we all live our lives.
Yes.
But here's a letter we got yesterday quickly. Listened in this AM in San Mateo, California. Was happy to hear you touch on the topic of sex education, abstinence funding, and abortion. Do it again. I was a little disappointed that one of you didn't know what a diaphragm baby was. you were sleeping in sex education class, right? Also, the reason women don't tell guys when they get pregnant and have an abortion is that you already have proven yourself to be unconcerned about the well-being of your sexual partner's body by not discussing and or using birth control in the first place, like a condom. Believe me, women know when you are just using them. When that occurs, you don't have any say in the matter, bud. Thanks for attempting a topic that nobody else will touch with a 10-foot pole. I went to the March for Women's Lives in Washington, D.C. in April, along with 1.3 million other people, and the press in America was totally silent. It makes me ill that the largest march in the history of the nation was ignored in the media. Keep up the good work. Sincerely, Janine in San Mateo. Thank you for the letter.
Thank you, Janine.
So we got a...
And I am a dummy. I had no sex education classes. I'm old.
Well, you're not a dummy. It's actually a slang. I mean, it's not like they told you in sex education class what a diaphragm baby was. I mean, you know, apparently the, you know, jazz guy got mad at my mom yesterday for telling me it was a mistake. Here's the liberal agenda. One, lobby Supreme Court to classify being bummed as a disease treatable by medical marijuana. Two, to support gay pride, assure gay teenagers who saw Alexander that not all bisexual world conquerors were that boring. Three, criticize Julia Roberts for contributing to world overpopulation, but praise her for contributing 2 more registered Democrats. Four, buy the U2 CD for Bono's work against third world debt, but try to ignore all the religious content. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. You think it's a coincidence that Bush shows up in Canada the week I'm supposed to move there? Wake up, man. You're all being used. Wake up.
Now, you know you really started something now. We're going to have to get to that story about your mom and the jazz guy after the break, okay? We got to get to that. We've got the Liberal Confessional coming up, and Mick Ware, Baghdad Bureau Chief for Time Magazine, in studio as Morning Sedition rolls on here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America.
The Consultant Pharmacist is your own personal health care consultant. You'll find them in nursing homes, other long-term care settings, and in your community, anywhere there's a need for high-level medication management. But Consultant Pharmacy is more than just managing medications. It's about helping people live better and longer lives. This message brought to you by the American Society of Consultant Pharmacists.
Hey, kid. Are you in the car with your parents right now? Have they ever asked you about the drug ecstasy? Probably not, right? They still think parties are all about getting drunk. Or that drugs are something only bad kids would do. Hey, they never ask. They'll never know the ease used by good kids, just like you. They'll never know about those bottles in your bedroom that look like vitamins, or that glow stick jewelry. They'll never know that E can cause seizures, strokes, heart attacks, or death. Even the first time you use it. Yeah, you sure got them fooled, all right.
Ask your kids about E right now. Then go to AskYourKidsAboutE.com.
Ben.
I am the Edison photograph to delight those who would have melody on.
Now, Sirius Satellite Fresh. It's on America Radio.
This
is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The Bush administration has yet to respond to the critical findings of the Defense Science Board of the U.S. Defense Department. Unit within the Pentagon quietly released a report shortly after Thanksgiving that it is highly critical of the Bush administration's efforts in the war on terror and in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Report essentially paints a picture that Muslims do not hate American freedom, but the overwhelming majority of their voices are dead set against America's policies. Those who criticize point America's overwhelming support for Israel and its continued opposition to Palestinian rights. Pentagon unit concludes that when the Bush administration publicly talks about diplomacy in Islamic societies, it is largely seen as no more than self-serving hypocrisy. Al-Qaeda is still seeking a change in America's policies towards the Muslim world. Organization's Deputy Leader Ayman al-Zawahiri vowed in a broadcast interview that Al-Qaeda will continue to attack the United States until Washington changes its direction with the Muslim world. Zawahiri described the Muslim world as patient and will continue fighting the U.S. until what he called the last hour. Tape was aired on Al Jazeera television yesterday. The Al-Qaeda leader warned the Bush White House that the only way it must choose is either cooperation with respect or deal with them as free loot, robbed land, and violated sanctity. Secretary of State Kofi Annan, Secretary General, that is, Kofi Annan of the United Nations, said that he was unaware his son received $30,000 a year for over 5 years from a Swiss-based company under investigation. This in connection with suspected corruption in the UN Oil for Food program in Iraq. The disclosure of the payments was the latest embarrassment for Annan and the United Nations related to the program to help Iraqis cope with UN sanctions imposed by Saddam Hussein's 1990 invasion of Kuwait. Annan told reporters yesterday that he had been working on the understanding that payments to his son, Kodo Annan, from Connect the Inspection SA, stopped in 1998 and had not expected that relationship to continue. But on Friday, U.N. spokesman Fred Eckert said Kodjo Annan's lawyer had informed the independent panel appointed by the Secretary General to investigate allegations of corruption. This is the Oil for Food program that the younger Annan continued to receive monthly payments through February of this year. The Department of Homeland Security is requiring employees to sign a non-disclosure agreement that some say is so restrictive that it might be considered unconstitutional. This according to allegations leveled by two unions for thousands of border workers who issued a complaint yesterday. The agreement introduced in May basically prohibits department employees from giving the public sensitive but unclassified information. It also says the government may conduct inspections at any time or place to ensure that the agreement is obeyed. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Love It Live. The NBA on Sirius. For game time, log on to Sirius.com or call 877-33-SIRIUS.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. How do you spell love? For some, it's F-O-R-D. For others, it's H-E-M-I. Yep, America's heartbeat isn't limited to Chevys. And when I come back, we'll run the numbers on America's love affair with cars. In today's world of discord and disappointment, one thing's for sure. Car cover owners are so satisfied, they buy their car covers all over again. Think car covers are a hassle? No. Research shows owners find covers easy to put on and take off. Are all covers the same? No. The standard in car cover fabric is Blockit by Kimberly Clark. Don't let sun and dust damage your car. Kimberly Clark's Blockit fabric's got you covered. That's Blockit by Kimberly Clark. To many drivers, cars aren't just transportation. They're members of the family. According to the International Car Wash Association, 84% of people polled said they loved their cars. 27% gave their cars pet names, while a whopping 64% hold conversations with their buggies. And when it comes down to business, many people prefer Buicks to boardrooms. 20% of car owners have held meetings in their cars, while 34% make important life decisions while behind the wheel. Now that's what I call TLC, which stands for Tender Loving Car. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
I heard about this company dumping toxins in local rivers, and I called their executives to say stop, but I never got through to anyone except secretary after secretary. In the meantime, the rivers are being destroyed, birds and fish are dying, and the local kids are getting sick with cancer. So I organized a huge protest, and we actually got the company shut down. And everyone starts celebrating until we realize that half the town's now unemployed. The welfare offices can barely handle the overload. People are being kicked out of their homes. And to top it all off, the rivers are still contaminated. The birds and fish are still dying. And most of the kids with cancer are twice as sick because they can't get the health care they need since their parents lost the health insurance they had when they worked for the company that dumped all the toxins in the first place.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. And just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
Mark Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, users of medical marijuana, and also recreational abusers of marijuana that isn't medical but still treats a little something.
Where are they? Where are they?
Well, they're probably sleeping.
Oh.
Good morning, crankheads, awake and alert on the West Coast. How are you? Seattle, I will be there Friday and Saturday. 4 shows, Giggles Comedy Club. You can go to giggles comedy club.com. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning. By the way, crankheads in Seattle, don't show up to the comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Don't show the giggles, all right?
Don't show up talking to yourself. Or, you know, with any big plans or diagrams.
All right, now come with the story, man. Come with the story.
Well, no,
I want to hear the story.
Well, yesterday, I brought up the fact that I was a diaphragm baby, which means that when I was conceived, my mother was using a diaphragm, which I have spun it to say that that means that I am capable and was capable at a very early age, you know, actual sperm size, of overcoming obstacles. but nonetheless, I brought that up that, I was told when I was a kid that I was basically a mistake, I guess, and a diaphragm baby. And apparently Jazbo, my mom's boyfriend, John, who was, took a few minutes away from listening to
Charlie Parker.
He likes the vocals, like, hey, he probably said to my mom, Toby, skidoo-bop-bop, why'd you tell your son that he was a mistake? You know, all his life. And my mother apparently says, he knows that I like him.
Mistake or not.
It was a mistake that I like. So, Kayla's in Paris. I guess too bad we can't get him on the phone. But we got Tim on the board today. Tim, who is a little more quiet than Kayla.
Yeah.
Kayla is usually over there. He's got a million things going on. He's got things on the screens that he shouldn't have. He's got the... No, it's up to him. But sometimes a little distracting. I know. But Tim, a very quiet guy.
Well, why?
What?
His mom's a librarian.
Lives out in Astoria. We were having a discussion about information. And we were talking about the internet and what an amazing resource it was.
Yeah.
Tim said... it makes you lazy. And I said, get on the mic, Tim. I said, do you go to the library? And you do, apparently. Is that the deal, Tim?
I really have no choice.
Why? Because your mom works there?
My house is a library.
Your house is a library. Come on.
What, did you geese a bunch of books or something?
That could be possible, actually.
Did you grow up in a library? How long has your mom worked for the public library system?
For like 20-something years.
Oh, really? So, you were taught that
his entire life, in other words.
I can't tell you the last time I went to a library to actually, check out a book or read something.
My daughter is a library fiend.
Really?
She loves libraries. She loves books. Yeah, absolutely loves books.
All right. So, Tim, you live out in Astoria with me. It's nice to have you here. He goes to the trade fair restaurant, or the trade fair market where I... in Astoria, which now caters to every race and religion under the sun. And he noticed that you could actually buy hookahs there. He's like, did you know you can buy water pipes at the trade fair? I'm like, I haven't been in the market for a water pipe, but I'm glad you found a place in the neighborhood to actually help you out, Tim. Are you going to buy a hookah?
Hey, medical marijuana user, all right?
It's all medical, Riley.
I know.
So right now, sometimes it's not easy, being a liberal. Do you know that?
No. Yeah, I did know that.
Thanks for getting on the mic, Tim. I know that was scary. I think you did very well, all right? All right, I don't want you.
You get an A for effort.
I don't want you to walk away from that saying, "Ah, well, I'm so stupid. Why did I even open?" Like, all right, you're not going to do that, are you?
No, he's not.
Okay.
Don't worry.
He's basically, see, I'm assuming that Tim is this mild-mannered captain. He's probably seething underneath and just like, if Marion makes a fool out of me, I don't need this crap in my life. You know what I mean? This is Kalo's gig.
Uh-oh.
Sometimes it's not easy being a liberal, as I said, and we all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. You, if you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now, it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley. I've sinned big time.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, listen, buddy, I bought some running shorts.
There's nothing in the Bible against running shorts, young man.
They were Nike running shorts, okay?
Oh, you mean Nike in the global sweatshop sense? The swoosh that ain't fair labor practices all over the world? That Nike?
I know. I really try to stay away from all things Nike. But listen, Brother Riley, these shorts they're fantastic. They're made out of this new dry fit fabric that doesn't get all sweaty. They're right.
Colored. The 8-year-old Indonesian boy who sold those shorts, I'll bet he gets all sweaty. And for $10 a week, he can't even afford to buy a pair of those shorts.
Oh, man, can I just buy a pair of shorts without feeling guilty? I like these shorts. You understand?
Of course you like the shorts. That's how they get you. No one wants to snap the chicken's neck, but everybody loves KFC. Don't you see that by continuing to purchase Nike products, you are perpetuating a cruel economic imperialism that keeps these countries impoverished? You should take those shorts back to the store immediately.
I can't.
What do you mean you can't? As the man says, just do it.
I can't because I already wore them, Riley.
Not only does that create a disgusting mental picture, it is morally wrong. I feel you might profit by some penance.
All right, okay, you're right. Lay it on me. What do I got?
As your penance, you must shackle yourself to a table, turn up all the heat in your house, and sew 50 pairs of dry fit shorts in a 14-hour day, pausing only when your neighbor comes over to whack you with a bamboo cane.
Wow, man. That's rough. I guess I deserve it.
Be thankful you didn't have to make shoes.
All right.
Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. I don't know whether anyone else is going to want to confess their liberal sins after hearing you hand out a harsh penance like that, Riley, but if anyone out there does want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270.
Any chicken neck snappers in the audience, call us.
I did feel bad, man. But I wore the shorts yesterday. I'm ashamed to say it. But
you loved them, though, didn't you?
Well, I mean,
you liked them.
They're light.
They felt great.
There's got to be another way. I bought some cotton ones along with it, just American-made, crappy Champion cotton ones. They probably aren't even American-made, but I didn't see.
Couldn't you guys have gotten, like, some fake Nikes?
Oh, man.
You know, some Fikey or
skittily bop bop. We'll be back with your calls after this at 13 Fast the Hour, Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Call 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Until recently, men have had only two options to improve their performance in the bedroom. Take a prescription drug that works quickly but only lasts for a few hours, or take a natural supplement that can take up to 4 weeks to work. But now there's a new option. In a recent medically supervised anecdotal study, over 96% of the participants who took Proton Extreme reported an increase in libido and erectile strength. Each participant was given a one-week supply. Some of the younger men had a response in just a few hours, others in just a few days. Regardless of your age, if you want to boost your libido quickly and naturally, then take the Proton test yourself. Results are guaranteed.
Call now for your risk-free supply. 1-800-399-6763. That's 1-800-399-6763. 9 out of 10 men have success with Proton. Now it's your turn. Call 1-800-399-6763. Again, 1-800-399-6763.
So I got the hint.
What hint?
About my problem.
Believe me, you don't have a problem.
I'm talking about the dinner rack she left in the shower last week.
Oh, that. Well, I noticed your dandruff was back.
If you've used dandruff shampoos that didn't work, you're ready for Dandruff. Dandruff penetrates deep into the scalp to control dandruff and leave hair looking healthy.
I wanted to tell you how great your hair looked, but I guess we got sidetracked.
Are you finally ready for Dandruff? Use as directed.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Obviously a fan. What do you like best about Howard's trip to Sirius Satellite?
He doesn't give a beep!
Freedom of speech.
I can say what he wants, do what he wants.
No censorship!
Everyone knows it's Howie.
You happy about Howard's trip to Sirius Satellite?
Yeah, definitely. I can't wait for Uncensored.
Sirius rules.
Howard's the best. And anytime I can hear him Uncensored, I'm there.
We'll finally do the show that he's wanted to. Everyone knows it's Howie.
I can't wait. It's going to be great.
What do you do when your teenager is disrespectful to your spouse? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. Your daughter says, "I hate you. You're the worst mom in the world." Or she lets a few choice words fly at your husband. What do you do? Well, you can just ignore it and let your spouse and child work it out. But what kind of message does that send to your child? They need to see a unified mom and dad. Parents who support each other with words and actions. If you don't like the way your spouse handled or treated your child, talk it out privately. Otherwise, send a clear, firm, and unified message to your child. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find out about ways you can build a stronger family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's
1-800-956-8300. Attention swimmers! Get out of the water! Everybody, out of the water!
Dude, is that... It's a pair of thunder thighs. Big ones, too. That mom, who's been swimming a lot with her kids, must have lost them.
Whoa. I heard about this happening once up at Laguna.
Small step number 54. Play with your kids. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to get healthy. Learn more at www.smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Stuart, how are those edges coming, little man?
Dad!
Sorry, you're not little. You're 5. Man, you're holding a 10-horsepower gas hedge trimmer. I should watch myself, huh? So, fire her up and show those edges who they're messing with.
But I could get hurt.
Don't focus on the negative. Come on, go get him, killer! Ah, that's the battle cry of a lawn warrior. Now, steady the blade! Where are those edges?
Dad, please!
Think of the trimmer as an extension of your arm. Come on, keep that arm away from...
The cat!
The cat! Oh, and the neighbor's new car!
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seatbelts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Dad, make it stop!
Come back here. You can do the neighbor's shrubs after you finish ours.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
The hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning Sedition. We're taking calls at 866-303-2270 for you to confess your liberal sins, your transgressions from the progressive mode, if you will, and we will try to help you resolve them. Or
we got a few doozies out here.
Tomorrow I go to my therapist, thank God, if there be one. Maybe there is. No, I don't know. But anyways, yes, I go to my therapist tomorrow. Here's my dream from last night. I'm a bushman in the Kalahari. I live on grubs and roots and wild game. I eat when I'm hungry and I sleep when I'm thirsty and sleep when I'm thirsty and dance and sing when I'm happy. I drink what? Yeah. I have no possessions. I'm completely isolated from the civilized world, so of course, I'm blissfully happy. One day an airplane flies over the savannah and drops an object out of the window. It's a square, black cube. Clearly God wants me to have it. I use this chunk to sit on, to pound roots into paste, and once I used it to kill a warthog. I carry it everywhere. I sing to it. I tell stories about it to my fellow tribesmen. I sleep with it, too, around the campfire. Has there ever been anything so useful? So one day a kid on safari visits my village. He's from Sherman Oaks. His name's Dwayne, and he has a cube the same size as mine. Dwayne cleans the warthog blood off of my precious black cube, connects a wire from my cube into his cube and starts playing something he calls Tomb Raider. Dwayne points at the cube and says, Xbox. I nod in wonder. I form the words, Xbox. He gives me the joystick and shows me how to play, and soon I become so entranced with Lara Croft and her exciting adventures and her beautiful thighs that I stop sleeping, I stop eating, and refuse to speak to anyone. I passed out from hunger, and 2 days later I woke up and Dwayne had stolen my Xbox. I went back out to the Savannah and waited for the airplane to come back and drop something else. I never noticed it before, but this place sucks. I woke up and my bed was filled with banyan roots.
Whoa.
Banyan roots.
Banyan.
Banyan.
Hmm.
Okay, looks like we've got some people that have some stuff on their mind.
Yeah, confessors.
Here we go, Alexis. Good morning in Miami. How are you?
Hey, Alexis.
Good morning. Good morning. Greetings from Miami.
What's going on?
Well, liberal professionals, I have a pretty typical liberal thing that most liberals don't admit to, which is I have a pretty negative reaction toward a lot of conservative Christians.
You have a negative reaction to a lot of conservative Christians.
Are you related to Mark Maron by any chance?
I know exactly how you feel, Alexis. You know, what I have been taught, and I don't know if there's a penance. I guess your penance is to try and behave in a more Christian way.
Well,
yeah.
It recently came up because a very good friend of mine, now I was raised not with a lot of religion, but I'm Jewish, and my good friend is Jewish too. And she married a guy, and through their marriage, they've become messianic.
Oh.
You know what those are, yes?
Yes.
And so she told me about this, and I got really, really upset, really, really upset. And I went and talked to a friend of mine, Rabbi Jeff, who's listening.
Yeah.
And he asked me a key question. He said, would you be so upset if she said she had converted to Buddhism?
Right.
And I said, no. And he goes, okay, then. Now you know what the problem is.
The problem is we have
the Christianity, not the fact that she wasn't Jewish. It was the fact that she had... was becoming a Christian, and it's very difficult for me. So I realized I had to deal with it because it wasn't her changing, because if she'd become a Buddhist, I wouldn't care.
Right, so it seems like your rabbi gave you the penance that you needed to process
it. The penance is that I'm the racist. It's my problem.
Well, I think that, you know, that my mistake is, Alexis, is that a lot of times I get aggravated with the sort of, you know, right-wing Christian agenda in terms of denying people their private freedoms and denying people their rights and wanting to legislate religion, that I assume, I make assumptions about all of them, that they're all, you know, condescending. And that they're all, you know, wanting to proselytize me and change the way that I see freedom. But I guess they're not all like that. I've been told that there are plenty of evangelical Christians that voted for Kerry, and that Jesus in his purest form was really the definition of liberalism.
Yes, well, I'm still working on that.
All right.
You know what the heart won't accept, right?
That's right. Well, you know, we forgive you here, Alexis, and
yes,
we hope you feel better.
Can I do the worst of the shout-outs and say hello to Rabbi Jeff and the Dave and Mary Alper Jewish Community Center, because he listens all the time?
You just did.
All
Thank
right.
you very much.
Thank you, Alexis.
Bye.
You take care. Bye.
You know, that proselytizing thing, there is something to that. You know, the other day I'm in my driveway, and I see this guy coming across the street, and he walks up to me and says, hi, good afternoon, brother. I'm trying to find out, do you belong to a church in the community? Because if you don't, I'd like to invite you to mine.
Yeah.
I said, no, I already go.
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm cool. It's all right.
I'm all set.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. You know, you got anything else? Oh, yeah. It was like out of the clear blue. I didn't know who the guy was. I just saw him coming across the street. And I realized he must have been going house to house trying to get people to join his church.
I had a group of Ethiopian Christians.
Uh-oh.
At the show the other night, and it was hilarious to me, because it's missionary back, you know,
yeah,
like they were converted by missionaries like probably several generations ago, and they were here on a mission.
The Ethiopian Christian Church, which goes by the name Coptic.
Uh-huh.
Actually has been around as long as Christianity. They were never converted, those people. Those
I don't know
people
if they were
Christians.
Coptic Christians.
They weren't Coptic
know.
Christians?
I don't know if they were. I didn't ask them that. They didn't get specific with me.
Because there is the possibility that those Ethiopians are part of the group that really...
I've read about them.
Yeah.
Like they've been there since Jesus.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's take another... You know, it's funny, the whole Messianic Jew thing, because I did a thing on Tough Crowd where I said, black Republican is like a Messianic Jew.
He doesn't...
All right, David.
You tell Kenneth Blackwell out in Ohio then.
Exactly. David in Atlanta, how are you?
Hey, David. How are you guys?
Good. What's
how
up?
You doing?
Good. I'm in Atlanta. I'm a transplant from San Francisco in the Bible Belt.
I'm assuming that was for work and you had to go.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. So I'm stuck here, you know, a rose among the thorns. And my boss, I have a confession, is my boss, she's very evangelical, born-again Baptist, and insists that we, at company functions and with clients, that we, you know, bow our heads and give thanks and all that rigmarole.
Oh, no.
I go through with it, and I guess that's my confession, is that I go through with it and I don't stand up and say, you know, I don't think this is appropriate. And so that's my huge confession to you guys.
Well, so you're, David, really, you're climbing up the corporate ladder? Is that what you're doing,
no.
David?
Well, I'm trying.
David, your penance is you have to stand up.
Hey, why don't you go to the Gold Club, okay? That's your penance. Go to the Gold Club.
That's converted church now.
Oh. It is?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, you're not serious.
No, I am.
What? You mean the John Stark Memorial Room is now turned into a church? You know about the Gold Club, Mary.
Come on.
The Gold Club is the premier topless club in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Not anymore, apparently.
Not anymore, yeah. What, they move it?
No, they got the pole still, no.
Yeah, it sounds like, you got quite a thing to wrestle with, but I would definitely, I think that you got to say something.
Yeah.
Just say that I'm uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really right.
Yeah, but see, don't call Marion if your boss fires you for this, all
right?
Call us, actually.
Yeah, do call us. We'll absolve your boss of whatever sins she may have committed.
Do what you can.
Stand up and say, hey, I just don't agree with this, and just...
Say, hey, I'm from San Francisco, damn it.
Well, no, I know. You don't got to stick it in her face and say, look, your God is silly. But I mean, it seems inappropriate to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I don't think that there's anything wrong with saying that it's inappropriate.
Yeah.
All right.
It's funny, though.
If you can, David, if you can.
I will do my best.
Okay.
But, you know, the New York Times did a big article about this. Thanks, David.
Thanks a lot, David.
They did a big article about how this kind of fundamental Christianity is emerging in workplaces all over the country.
I know, it's inappropriate.
Scary.
Let's take another call here. Lisa in San Francisco listening to The Quake. We got about a minute. What do you got?
What do you got, Lisa? You sinner, you.
Oh, I am so bad, you guys. Thanks for taking the call. I love you. Oh, I was really, I hate myself, but I can't return it because I already gave it to him.
Yeah.
I went to Sports Mart, and I wandered throughout the store for quite an extensive period of time, and I bought a Nike sweatshirt because it was the nicest one.
Yeah.
And it was a special birthday present for him. Oh, what are you going to do to me?
I think that a couple of these... I just had a couple lashes with the whip.
A caning.
Okay. That's okay.
I'll bend over.
Okay, here. We'll take a couple more. How is that? You okay? Okay.
Well, are you San Franciscans?
Well, now I got to take a break.
I'm actually a little bit north in Marin County.
Oh, okay. You're in Marin?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got a cousin who lives up in Cotati. I know.
Oh, God. I love Cotati.
Yeah. So I guess I would just lay the responsibility on your boyfriend. If he can live with it, you know, you've paid your penance. I got to whip you a couple times.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Okay, good.
Thank you
so
much.
See you later.
You too.
Bye-bye. She's easy to please.
Oh, that could have went on for a while.
Oh, yeah, it could have.
I felt that I was sliding down the slope of inappropriateness there.
Frat house?
Not frat house.
Just
no.
Non-propriety.
Just a simple sort of, S&M relationship that was unfolding that could have really blossomed into something had I let it. But, you know, she's got a boyfriend and it's not right.
And she's in Marin County, which means she probably got money, too.
And I'm married. Oh, yeah, I'm married.
Yeah.
And
it
was about Nike. That's what this was about, you know, change.
Yes. Loose change.
We got Mick Ware.
Ware is coming up.
I think he's out there.
Yeah.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah. And, of course, in the next hour... Legendary singer Darlene Love joins us here on Air America Radio.
She's going
to sing. Stay with us.
By now you've heard that Canadian prescription drug prices are up to 85% less expensive than they are in the U.S. Marge Burns heard and ordered her Zocor and saved $60 on a 90-day supply. Charlie Sumner heard and saved $35 on his Lipitor. If you are buying any prescription medication, it's time to call Advocare at 1-888-471-4721. AARP Magazine ranked Advocare one of the top pharmacies in Canada. In fact, the state government of Illinois has visited AdvoCare's facility and concluded that their procedures are exceeding the United States government's requirements. And now you too can save by calling AdvoCare at 1-888-471-4721 or visit their website at pharmacyonthenet.com. Your medications are delivered right to your door and you save up to 85%. It's so easy and the money you will save is incredible. Don't pay higher prices just because you live in the U.S. Call 1-888-471-4721 or log on to pharmacyonthenet.com.
From across the Big Pond and the land that brought us warm beer, cucumber sandwiches, and mush peas comes all the excitement of the world's most popular sport. It's Barclay Premiership English Football every Saturday on Sirius. No need to hit the pub to get your team when you can now act like a true hooligan in the comfort of your home or car. Barclay Premiership English Football. Only on Sirius Sports Byline USA 122.
Tally-ho.
This is Earth and Sky for Sunday, November 28th. On today's date in 1967, a new kind of star was discovered by a graduate student at Cambridge University.
Jocelyn Bell was sifting through data from a radio telescope needed for her doctoral dissertation. She noticed a strange signal emanating from the same part of the sky each night, a series of regular radio pulses, 1 1/3 seconds apart.
Some scientists speculated that the signals could have been beamed to Earth by aliens. After all, what in nature could produce such rapid and regular signals? Soon, though, Bell found a second pulsing signal, slightly faster, in another part of the sky. This second discovery implied a widespread natural phenomenon. Within 2 years, astronomers had spotted about 20 pulsing signals, and they had an explanation.
Today, the signals are interpreted as coming from stars that came to be called pulsars. They're thought to be what's left behind when evolved stars explode as supernovae. As they rotate, these remnant stars are like lighthouses, casting twin beams of energy across space. When a beam sweeps past Earth, radio telescopes receive a burst of radio waves.
Astronomers have now located more than 2,000 pulsars, and the number continues to climb. That's our show. We're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
There is no scientific evidence that use of one drug necessarily causes use of any other drug. Relieved? Well, here's a reality check. Among adolescents who use illicit drugs, such as cocaine and heroin, almost every one of them used marijuana first. Makes you think, doesn't it? Help our kids understand. For more information, call 1-800-729-6686.
Racing thoughts. Horrible images crept through my mind. I thought I was seeing the devil and kept asking my friends if I was dead. It felt like I was having a heart attack. When we got to the hospital, I was committed to the psychiatric ward. I spent the next 14 days there.
17-year-old Lynn Smith had always heard ecstasy was the harmless and happy drug, which is only true if she'd never used it. Leave ecstasy alone. To learn how or to read other real-life ecstasy tragedies, visit drugfreeamerica.org.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back, thanking me for my concerns, and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving out 2 indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who will work night and day for months, just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
Past the hour, Mark Maron, it's Mark Riley in the studio with us. You didn't know it because you didn't have headphones on. Time Magazine's Baghdad Bureau Chief, Michael Ware, is with us. Good morning, Michael. Good
morning, guys.
Good morning.
He just played Pearl Jam's I'm Alive.
Oh, that's cool.
Man, sometimes when we talk to you on the phone, you're like, you all right over there?
Yeah, I just got heat in the morning. That's all right.
So, like, we're just talking on the break. Like, you live in Baghdad now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's the that's my sentence, I'm afraid.
But did you, like, when you get an assignment like this, do you have a choice? I mean, how did this come about? Because you seem to dig the work.
Yeah, a glutton for punishment, I tell you. I don't know what's, you know, my own good.
Yeah.
But, no, it's something that essentially finds you. I mean, if you're willing to do it, then somehow or other you always end up there.
Right.
And, but, I mean, the situation right now that we're experiencing at Time Magazine is something that all news organisations are experiencing. The pool of people that we can draw upon who are willing to go to Iraq has whittled down and down and down.
Out of fear.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, that would be it.
And there's a lot of jittery people back in the office who have been there before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, essentially those with any sense or wisdom have chosen not to go back.
So how long have you been back stateside?
Just a week.
And are you feeling like, are you getting itchy like Martin Sheen in Apocalypse Now? Like, I got to get back in it.
Yeah. Just don't go slamming any doors around me. We may end up with the horror. So, it's a bit like that. Put it this way, my body is in New York, but my head is still waiting to catch up.
Yeah, so we've been getting some reports out of Iraq this morning that, we've got this defense, the Department of Defense report, this thing that says that primarily that it's not, we've talked to you about this before, the Muslim jihadists and the insurgencies, it's not about, you know, our freedom that they envy, it's about our policies. Now, that's true, yes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, in Iraq now, what is going on after Fallujah? Like, get us up to speed. Now, Fallujah is being promoted as some sort of success story. But in terms of the effect it's had on the insurgency, what do you think?
Well, I mean, on one level, you know, the battle for Fallujah, or the military operation, it was a sweeping success on a certain grade.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of going in and retaking physical territory, a city, whilst you level it in the process.
Yeah.
That's been achieved. That was a sweeping victory. But in the broad terms, I mean, what has it actually accomplished?
And
has it broken the back of the insurgency? No way.
Yeah.
It's barely dented it. At best, you could say it's disrupted it.
Mm-hmm.
But the insurgents knew this was coming.
Yeah.
They'd made great preparation for it. I was meeting them in Baghdad before the offensive began.
And they were already moving on?
They'd left what they'd done in the past. It was precisely the same. They left behind essentially suicide squads to put up a rear guard action. And to make the heroic, in inverted commas, fight.
Mick, you got a sense that they actually planned, the insurgents now, actually planned how they were going to deal with the invasion. They must have known about it ahead of time, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we flagged it pretty well.
Yeah.
I remember.
We were driving down the street with signs.
Here we come, Fallujah's next. Yeah, big fluorescent lights this way. So, they had plenty of time. They knew what they were going to be up against. And you could see that in the city with the obstacles they'd left behind and the way they'd placed their IEDs or mines and booby traps. And it was evident that they were trying to herd the US troops down certain streets and into other areas that they'd set up as what you would call killing zones.
So some sort of like terrorist Rube Goldberg device where, you know, the Americans will walk in and just tumble through this maze of explosions.
Absolutely.
Now tell us about these suicide squads. I never heard about them. How do they function? Is that a real part of the insurgent armed
It certainly is.
Wing?
It certainly is. I mean, it's not the kind of thing that is born inherently of the Iraqi fighter. This is something that's come to them through the foreign jihad that has seeped into the country. It's bled across its borders. And it's a tactic that I personally saw in Afghanistan in the battle for Shahi Kot. It's a tactic that I saw in northern Iraq during the invasion itself, in Halabja, where Al-Qaeda-linked group Ansar al-Islam had taken haven. And it's also something that I saw in the Battle of Samarra just 5-6 weeks before Fallujah. Essentially, if that's their stronghold or their sanctuary, when they know the offensive is coming, they're not there to take the military head on. They know that they can't beat them. I mean, you can't mess with the might of the US military. So what they do is they preserve their force to come back and fight another day. So the leadership and the bulk of their fighters simply wither away and disappear, leaving behind a rear guard action. And those guys they ain't going anywhere.
They know that.
Absolutely. So what they do is they stay behind to kill as many American boys as they can, and then die in the process. And
die as martyrs, then.
Absolutely. Well, this is something that the insurgents, both the Iraqis and the foreign holy warriors inspired by bin Laden, have said to me since last year. And something now that really resonates with the US GIs, the grunts on the ground. They say, you've got all the technology in the world, and you've got all this whiz-bangery, but we have something that you don't that is far more powerful. We are willing to die. We're not afraid of death.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's very salient, because there's no more potent weapon on a battlefield than a man who is prepared to die.
Michael, I'm sorry. Let me say that properly.
By the way, feel free.
The Defense Science Board report said something that really struck me, and that is that the United States, and this is according to their study, is operating without a working channel of communication to the world of Muslims and of Islam. True?
Absolutely. Look, what this war is about, I mean, every war has an element of this, but this one particularly so. This is a war on the airwaves. The military would call it IO, information operations. That's what's the real battleground. Again, this is what the insurgents were saying to me way back in May, June, July last year. They said, we know we can't defeat the Americans on the battlefield. That's not where this is going to be won or lost. It's going to be on the television screen. It's going to be in the homes of middle Iraq, and it's going to be in the living rooms of middle America. They're saying, essentially, the strategy is, we're backing that our ability to sustain a marathon of bloodshedding, enormous losses on our side, will outlast your public's political will to keep your troops here.
What about some of the messages that are coming out from Al-Qaeda now, from al-Zawahiri and bin Laden, as being a little more diplomatic? Is that part of the appeal to moderate Muslims?
I suspect so. I mean, I took particular note myself of the most recent message from Zawahiri. Whilst I haven't looked at it in detail, what leapt out to me in the small news bites that I heard was him saying that there was a possibility of a dialogue, that you know, if you change your ways, if you amend the errors of your ways, then we can talk. There can be a common ground. Now, that's not something I've heard from them before to a great deal.
But they can't be appealing to this president. I mean, they've got to be appealing to, American Muslims, and I'm assuming the moderate Muslims throughout the world that may not believe in what they're doing because of the violence.
Yeah, and I think they're trying to apply, my guess would be, very, very subtle pressure to non-Muslims in the West as well.
Mm-hmm.
To say that, look, you know, there is another road, and if you abandon Bush, then you can seek this road, and we can come to a compact. That said, however, I think that it was to Osama bin Laden's and Abu Musab al-Zarqawi's, you know, music score, to the script, that George Bush was re-elected. I don't think they would have taken more delight in anything else, because that allows them to polarize the world. And they can cast themselves in the opposing light to George Bush.
Wow.
I mean, he is the great
uniter of terrorists.
Terrorism, yeah.
Yeah.
So let's take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about what the insurgency wants. We're going to talk about the upcoming elections and what's in store there. We're talking to Michael Ware, Time Magazine's Baghdad Bureau Chief. It's very exciting to have him in the studio. We'll be back with him after this. It is 43 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Check out all our favorite links, our latest blog entries, and our new line of merchandise at morningsedition.com.
Are you losing your hair? Is that bald spot getting bigger? Is your hair looking thinner? Why aren't you using Avacor, the hair growth treatment that has helped thousands of people just like you regrow their hair?
I am 39 years old. I've been slowly balding over the last 10 years. Thanks to Avacor, my hair is coming back, and I couldn't be more excited.
The best product that I've tried.
Avacor is the product of the 21st century.
If you're losing your hair and haven't tried Avacor yet, how about a free month supply? We're giving away a free month of Avacor with all of today's orders. Avacor is proven to successfully stop hair loss and regrow hair.
Call 800-344-0089 for your risk-free trial of Avacor. Call now, 800-344-0089. That's 800-344-0089. And remember, all of today's orders will receive an additional month's supply of Avacor absolutely free. Call 800-344-0089.
Lose 30 pounds in 30 days? Or how about eat whatever you want and still lose weight? Look, you and I both know that is not going to happen. I'm Dr. Greg Cinnamone, and I'd probably be the first to sign up for that magic pill that makes diet and exercise irrelevant. But until that day, I'm content to be one of 100,000-plus folks who haven't just ordered CortiSlim once. They've ordered CortiSlim again. So many people have found that CortiSlim is part of an absolutely brilliant lifestyle of managing daily stress. Why? Because stress leads to problems, like gaining weight. We believe that good health involves diet, exercise, supplementation, and CortiSlim. And I want you to have Dr. Talbot's Total Sense program free with your order. Look, the holidays are here, and stress and overeating is a problem. This is your chance to step off that scale and into the CortiSlim lifestyle. Call 1-800-921-BURN. 800-921-BURN. 800-921-BURN.
From Christmas kids,
Grandma got run over by a reindeer,
to Christmas cool,
ho, 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 ho,
holiday classics,
chestnuts roasting on an open fire,
to festival Yule,
Feliz Navidad.
Music to get you in the spirit of the season, 24/7 on Sirius Holiday, Channel 4.
Prospero año y
How do you teach conversation skills to a toddler? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. Start by kneeling down and making eye contact with your young child. Limit the amount of words you use and keep the message simple. Allow your toddler enough time to respond to what you've just said. Keep in mind that during these early years, you're teaching far more than word recognition. You're actually modeling for your toddler proper ways to communicate with future teachers, peers, employers, and perhaps their own family one day. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find out about ways you can build a stronger family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
All right, you 4 years old son, ready for the big leagues. Put your bat on, buddy. There you go, helmet.
Silly head.
Okay, that's right, your thigh guards. Now don't forget your mouth guard. You don't want to be losing teeth in your first game. Well, they're baby teeth, but yeah, put it in it. Don't let them worry you. They may be over 200 pounds and kind of mean looking, but you're ready for them. Just run through them. Here's the ball. Run!
Daddy?
Don't look at me. Run with it. Go, boy, run!
But I could get hurt.
No pain, no gain. Now run!
Ow!
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult. So why put them in adult seat belts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Ah, you should have sprayed on them.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
In today's world, all voices must be heard. That's why our local Optimist Club sponsors an oratorical contest for local young people. The contest lets kids gain experience in public speaking.
If I could change the world.
It inspires today's youth to motivate and inform others through the art of public speaking. And it gives them an opportunity to compete for college scholarships. The Optimist Oratorical Contest.
You can make a difference too.
Bringing out the best in kids.
Past the hour, Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
We're
talking to our guest in studio, Michael Ware, Time Magazine's Baghdad bureau chief, one of the few reporters who's got the courage and connections and wherewithal to actually, you know, be with the insurgents. Now, what's going on? You know, we were off mic here talking to you about a sort of personal story in terms of Al Zarqawi, who is, you know, as you call him, the dark heart, yes?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the central core, the hardened center of the insurgency. I mean, the foreign jihadis, the holy warriors inspired to Osama bin Laden, in many cases linked to Osama bin Laden, have come in. They've hijacked the entire insurgency. There was a homegrown resistance fight by former army officers who simply were fighting to free their homeland from what they saw as a foreign occupier.
Baathists?
Yeah. Baathists, former members of the intelligence services, you know, ranking officers in the Republican Guard, members of the Secret Service, the Foreign Service. I mean, they were fighting a war of liberation as they saw it. Now, these very same guys who I've been dealing with for over a year, when I talk to them now, they're no longer interested in a free Iraq. They're talking about an Islamic State, not just for Iraq, but for the entire Muslim world. This is something that they didn't care about 18 months ago.
So this is from the Al-Qaeda influence and al-Zarqawi's influence. Now, you've had some personal experience with al-Zarqawi?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've had considerable dealings with Zarqawi's group, and there's been certain points where, for one reason or another, they'd selected me as an outlet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd had a dialogue with them that was open through back channels for quite some time. Now, a very common tactic that we see, and it's proving very effective for the insurgents, and that's the intimidation mm-hmm. of Iraqis who work for, you know, Western companies, for the Iraqi government, for the American military. So we're seeing hosts of executions and beheadings.
Mm-hmm.
And as disturbing as that is, I mean, as we were talking about, it's particularly come home to me
mm-hmm.
because without giving away too much detail, I mean, it's become very personal because a Iraqi member of my staff, a journalist, has been taken.
Kidnapped?
Yeah, he was rolled up by foreign fighters who are connected to Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. And it's been many weeks now, and we've been talking to the kidnappers, and there's been some sort of a negotiating process. I'd call it a negotiating process, except there is no real negotiation. And unfortunately, some of the people, the Iraqi nationalist commanders who are trying to help me and interceding on my behalf, have either been sidelined from the process or recently died in the Battle of Fallujah. So it really brings this stuff home to you.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So do you have any idea, you know, what they want after a certain point? I mean, people, the contacts you're talking with?
This is one of the things, I mean, once any hostage ends up with the jihadi,
mm-hmm.
with in broad sense, the al-Qaeda types, although that's not actually an accurate description, but still, that's where they enter a black hole. I mean, for example, there was the South Korean fellow who was kidnapped and ultimately beheaded. Now, during the days, that brief window when people were attempting to get him back, I had someone in the South Korean embassy. And South Korean intelligence officials were at one point saying, look, we're very confident we're going to get this guy back. It's just going to be a matter of money. Once we negotiate the amount, we're sure we'll secure his release. The very next day, that same fellow came back and just went, we've never seen anything like this. These people don't want anything. They're just going to kill him.
Really? Pure terror.
And that's what it is. Once you know that once you end up with them, and it's all over. So, prior to the operation in Fallujah, I'd stopped becoming a journalist. I'd downed tools. I hadn't taken a note in my notebook for almost 3 weeks because all I was consumed by was hostage negotiation
mm-hmm.
for a young American photographer and then for an Australian journalist. Now, the American photographer was taken by Shia rebels, so that's fine. That's a completely different dynamic. But the Australian was taken by Sunni nationalist insurgents. The window we had to get him back was before he was passed on to the jihadi. Because once that happened, he was gone.
Now, why would the Baathists, the nationalists, pass him on to the jihadis? Is there some sort of barter going on between
originally,
the two?
Originally, it was part of the open market.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, criminal gangs or local militia would grab someone, normally as a target of opportunity. You were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And then, essentially, you went to the highest bidder. And the highest bidder has always been the jihadis, who have bottomless wells of money to draw upon.
Where's that money coming from?
It's the same money that's fueled al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. It's the same money that fueled the Mujahideen, the fight against the Russians in Afghanistan. It's the rich Gulf states. It's the sheikhs and emirs and the businessmen in Saudi Arabia and other countries who give a tithe, who donate to the jihad.
That's anything to the idea that there are groups here in the States that are doing essentially the same thing?
I mean, I can't speak with authority on that, but I certainly wouldn't close my mind to it, and quite frankly, it wouldn't surprise me.
And these are the same Saudis that our administration has had a history of doing business with, and there's been no reprisals at all.
Absolutely. I mean, I see it in the Middle East. I've seen it in in South Asia, where, in inverted commas, our allies are very patently playing a double game.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that. And the military knows that. Yet, for a whole host of complicated reasons, we continue to maintain the pretense of friendship and cooperation, while secretly they screw us at every chance that they get.
You know, there's an election coming up, or an election scheduled for January 30th. You'll be going back to Iraq for it. And I have to ask you, how badly do ordinary Iraqi citizens want democracy? We're told here that this is what they want. We're told that they want this kind of representative participation. Do they, in fact?
Short answer would be no.
No?
No. I mean, by and large, democracy remains a foreign abstract concept
mm-hmm.
to them. And as in Afghanistan, before a villager or just a ordinary individual vote, he'll take his guidance from his tribe leader, or from his sheikh, or from, now increasingly so, from the imam at the mosque.
Really?
Which is not something that was a part of the Iraqi dynamic until, you know, the invasion, until, you know, American policy took the West there. I
mean, because it was primarily a secular country.
Absolutely. Well, we're now witnessing the Islamization
mm-hmm.
of Iraq. Saddam was not a fool. He may have been evil, but he was not a dill. He knew that one of the greatest internal threats to his regime was militant Islam. So he kept a very tight lid on it. Now, we removed him without replacing any apparatus. We opened the borders, allowing all sorts to pour in. And now, to cut a long story short, we are the midwives to the next generation of Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after September 11, they were seeking a platform. And by invading Iraq, you know, the Bush administration has given it to them. So there are now terrorist safe havens in Iraq that did not exist under Saddam. There are Iraqi fighters who had no concept, real concept of Islam. Many of them didn't even know how to pray, who are now fighting a holy war against the infidel states. Now, in the past, that just wouldn't have even occurred to them. So the very thing that this administration says, allegedly, that it went to Iraq to prevent,
mm-hmm.
it is creating, it is making the nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Now, if, let's assume there are elections, let's assume, mm-hmm. for the sake of argument, that some Shia coalition wins the elections and they become the government, mm-hmm. can they handle the foreign fighters?
Oh, no way. Absolutely no way, for a host of reasons, but I'll try and boil it down. For a start, the foreign fighters and the Sunni insurgents who have now cross that line and join them ideologically. They talk in their literature and when I deal with them about three enemies. There's the Zionist, there's the infidel, which is the West, and then there's the unbelievers. And the unbelievers are the Shia.
Ah, okay.
Wow.
It's scary, scary.
But you're going back, and we want you to be careful. It's great talking to you. We hope we are able to maintain our relationship and that you take care of yourself.
Yeah, we appreciate the time, really, for coming in studio like this.
Michael Ware from Time Magazine, the Baghdad Bureau Chief. You know, good luck out there, man.
Thanks very much. Yeah, thanks very much. I hope we keep talking as we descend further into chaos.
Oh, my God.
But be safe, man. No matter what else, be safe, please.
And hang out for 1 second while we tease the next hour. So let's shift gears here,
Darlene.
We're
going to shift gears. Darlene Love is going to be with us in our next hour.
Okay, and you know, I'll talk more about me, and we'll do comedy bits. And now we got to recover from the harsh realities of Michael Ware. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks,
again.
Mike. I'll tell you the truth. I'm out of breath.
So
listen to this. It's a scary thing. But stay with us. We'll be right back here on Air America Radio.
A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. Basketball great Charles Barkley.
I got a little pop quiz for you. What do I have a hard time keeping shut? And what is my nickname? And now I got one for you. Do you know your kids
principal's nickname?
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Soon, all over-the-counter medicines will have one thing in common. Simplicity. That's because all over-the-counter medicines will feature new, easier-to-read labels that clearly show their ingredients, uses, warnings, and directions. Because if there's one symptom we all want to relieve, it's confusion. For more information, call the Food and Drug Administration at 1-888-INFO-FDA. That's 1-888-INFO-FDA. The new label. It's clearly better.
Compromise off. Serious on. Uncompromised music and entertainment.
Uncompromised music and entertainment.
Serious. It's on.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. No surprise here, but there's word this morning that Iraqi police and National Guard forces are falling apart in the wake of widespread insurgency. The development is a conclusion of American officials who are monitoring the activities of both law enforcement agencies in the provinces where the attacks have been high. Iraqi recruits for months have been weathering assassinations and car bomb attacks aimed at the lines of applicants seeking employment at police stations. Officials of the Interior Ministry point to a classic example of the threats, like the one yesterday in which several police officers were standing on line in Ramadi waiting to collect salaries and were killed by a suicide car bomber. Time magazine Baghdad Bureau Chief Michael Ware told Air America's Mornings edition this morning that terrorist mastermind Abu Musab al-Zarqawi is interested in the development of an Islamic State as opposed to seeking independence of Iraq. Ware confirmed earlier charges that Americans will continue to face attacks until their objectives are realized by the insurgents. Car bomb exploded in the crowded market in the town of north of Baghdad today, killing at least 7 people and wounding 20, underlying Iraq's severe security problems with elections just 2 months away, as well as near daily attacks on Iraqi security forces and civilians. November has been one of the deadliest months for U.S. troops, with 134 killed. The highest death toll was in April of this year, when 135 soldiers and Marines were killed. The bomb went off in a busy staging area in an oil refining town 112 miles north of Baghdad as U.S. military patrol was passing. The blast destroyed market stalls and caused panic among the throng of shoppers, according to witnesses there. Secretary General Kofi Annan of the United Nations said he was unaware his son received $30,000 a year for over 5 years from a Swiss-based company under investigation in connection with suspected corruption in the U.N. Oil for Food program in Iraq. The disclosure of the payments was the latest embarrassment for Annan and the United Nations related to the program to help Iraqis cope with U.N. sanctions imposed after Saddam Hussein's 1990 invasion of Kuwait. Annan told reporters yesterday that he had been working on the understanding that payments to his son, Kojo Annan, from Connect Inspection SA stopped in 1998, and he had expected the relationship to not to continue, that is. But on Friday, U.N. spokesman Fred Eckert said Kojo Annan's lawyer had informed the independent panel appointed by the Secretary General to investigate charges of corruption in the Oil for Food program that the younger Annan continued to receive monthly payments through February of 2004. And President Bush's trip north of the border today will be akin to a polite dance where he'll try to avoid missteps that could create more anti-Americanism in Canada. For his part, the Canadian Prime Minister Paul Martin will want to avoid looking as if he's bending to U.S. interests and will trade and security issues.
From across the big pond and the land that brought us warm beer, cucumber sandwiches, and mush peas comes all the excitement of the world's most popular sport. It's Barclay Premiership English Football, every Saturday on Sirius. No need to hit the pub to catch your team when you can now act like a true hooligan in the comfort of your home or car. Barclay Premiership English Football. Only on Sirius Sports Byline USA 122.
Tally-ho!
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. When I say clean air, what comes to mind? Green meadows? Ocean breezes? Oxygen bars? Well, forget that and stay tuned, because when I come back, I'll tell you about some smoking clean air. Hi, this is Bobby Likas. Your body relies on antioxidants to stay healthy. So does your vehicle. Oxidation in fuel and oil creates deposits. That means clogged injectors and sludge in your engine, causing costly breakdowns. Your service shop can reverse oxidation in your vehicle by adding BG's MI 3000 Plus and MOA at your next oil change. Ask your shop about BG products or go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. A better place than an oxygen bar to suck in clean air is the racetrack. Clean air is a racing term for undisturbed air, the kind the lead driver enjoys when there's no one in front of him. So he cuts through the atmosphere like an aerodynamic knife through butter. On the other hand, dirty or turbulent air created when race cars are bunched together makes cars hard to handle. They slide in corners and weave on straights, like your car behind semis on the highway. That's why drivers try to avoid the pack during a race, so they can enjoy the cleanest air of all afterward, during the smoking victory lap. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Growing up on a farm out here, I just thought life was great. I had my own horse. I drove a tractor with my dad. For me, I thought farm life was the American dream. Hi, my name is Rex Phipps. That all changed when I was reminded how dangerous working on a farm can be. My cousin was almost killed in a terrible accident. I had to do something. I couldn't help my cousin, but I could help other people avoid this on their farms. So I volunteered at farm safety day camps for children of all ages, teaching kids about being safe around tractors, tools, and animals. Just like I found a need to fill in my community, your community needs you. Find out how you can help in your hometown. Get out and live. Volunteer.
Brought to you by the Hitachi Foundation's Yoshiyama Award for Exemplary Service to the Community and this station.
And it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, progressive utopians of all kinds, users of medical marijuana, good morning to you, and recreational users of marijuana, good morning to you as well. I hope everything is okay, and I hope the users of medical marijuana can continue using medical marijuana safely, as it should be. It is a natural substance. It is one of the only things that relieves the nauseousness and the inability to eat and many of the symptoms of brain cancer, glaucoma. They're finding it treats numerous other illnesses, and they don't even know how, because there are so many sort of unique chemical compounds within marijuana. And the reason they want to take it away from people is because of moralizing idiots and greedy pharmaceutical companies. Right, Mark Riley? Good morning to you. Sorry, I got right off on something that we weren't even going to talk about. Just stuck in my craw. You know, I had smoked some pot in my day, sir.
No.
There was a point in my life where I smoked pot every day, sir.
No.
And you know what? I felt all right. I felt pretty damn good, you know. But
didn't we all?
But the recreational thing—the only liability of being a recreational pot smoker on a day-to-day basis—is eventually you get a little dumb.
You don't want to do nothing anymore.
It's a will killer.
But you know what? You know, the Supreme Court here—I don't understand this. You know, the Supreme Court is deliberating on this medical marijuana thing,
mm-hmm.
and they're questioning whether or not the laws, the state laws,
mm-hmm.
can be abused by people who aren't really sick. Well, gee, you know, I mean, banks can be robbed.
Right.
You know, people can be conned and swindled, but that doesn't mean you close the bank. I mean, the bottom line is you set up a system that minimizes the possibility that people who are not sick will have access to the drug. That seems to make perfectly logical sense to me.
It is hypocritical, because the truth of the matter is even if somebody has cancer and they're beginning morphine, you know, believe me, when that person dies, someone in their family's going to be like, really? Some pills left over? No, pills left over? No, but no, it's true. I mean, you know, medicine is medicine. Drug addicts are drug addicts. I mean, no matter what, you know, whether it's legal or it's not legal, you know, people who want to do drugs recreationally are going to find their drugs. That doesn't mean you deny the person that needs the drugs for serious health reasons the access to the drugs.
Well, you know, the thing that is so troubling about the way both politicians and the judiciary deal with this issue is that they try to tell people who are sick and who are made to feel better by using medical marijuana, that there's no proof that it does anything good. Well, how do you tell somebody who feels better, who's able to eat, who's able to, you know, at least suppress some of the symptoms of whatever problem, whether it's tumors, cancer, whatever, how in the world do you tell someone, well, you don't really feel better? There's no evidence that says you feel better, so you really don't feel better.
It's ridiculous, because the truth of the matter is that even if, you know, even if it's a placebo effect, it doesn't matter why people feel better. I mean, they're finding success with this drug, so they should be able to use the drug. It's just that, you know, pot has been, it's not even demonized. It's been mystified for years as, you know, this sort of, you know, the gateway drug, or the sort of the strange beatnik drug, the hemp smokers, Mary Jane. Then it just sort of evolved through the 60s, and now they have pot that literally can, you know, if somebody from the 60s, like, time traveled and smoked a pot today, their head would explode.
Well, yeah, either that or they'd be on a couch for about a week or so. But, you know, there is a very strange history, because people have made their political careers on the back of marijuana. If you go back to when they first started outlawing it across the country, when they first started demonizing it, and certainly through, I'm sure you saw Reefer Madness.
That was ridiculous.
I thought it was a comedy, I swear to God. No. But then I realized that this was what people thought of marijuana at the time. Now, mind you, this was a country in 1936, which is the year it was made, that had just 4 years earlier repealed prohibition. So people could go out and get stinking drunk. That was no problem. But they apparently needed something else to demonize, and they chose marijuana.
It's also so accessible, available, and growable. I mean, I think a lot of the pot that is smoked in America is actually grown in America.
Yeah.
And I think also that, you know, as far as drugs go, and I'm talking as an ex-recreational drug user. I mean, pot is really the least dangerous in a lot of ways, obviously, just by the nature of where you go on pot.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, like you said before, the real liabilities of pot smoking is, you know, eventually, you know, you're dreaming. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you got to get up. Hit the snooze, man. Go back to sleep.
Yeah, and it just gets to a point where, you know, you think it enhances everything, and on some level it does. But the bottom line is recreational. I mean, it should be legalized for other reasons, too. You know, I mean, you know, liquor, right? Booze and cigarettes are the most dangerous substances in the world. I mean, booze is dangerous for a number of reasons. Either you're going to wreck a car, you're going to, you know, asphyxiate because you, you know, alcohol poisoned yourself, or you're going to get into a fight that's going to get your ass kicked. You know, there's a million things that could happen. And, you know, and same with some other recreational drugs that are illegal. But pot is one of those drugs that, if done with a certain amount of prudence, is not that dangerous.
Yeah, how many bar fights have people heard about among reefer heads?
Yeah, and
never.
But, you know, that's a whole other issue, the legalizing for recreational use and, you know, taxing it, which is what they would do. But the truth of the matter is there's something threatening to the pharmaceutical industry, because if something can be grown and it can't be controlled and it can't be managed and can't be replicated and it can't be, you know, sold in a prescription form at an elevated price that they can make money from, they get very aggravated. And with the moralizing idiots, you know, that, you know, they're making assumptions about their kids, about the sort of the demonic reputation of the evil weed, you know, they just, again, want to, you know, control everything and everybody and how we all think and feel and what we want to do.
And there's also an underlying political dynamic here that cuts across a number of issues that we are facing in the early part of the 21st century, and that is the whole issue of states' rights. Remember that 11 states have passed medical marijuana laws since 1996. Now, those states, to some extent, allow the use of medical marijuana for medicinal purposes. Well, it's the federal government now that is trying to legislate against these laws that these states have, in fact, made. Mm. And it's, again, one of those kind of political things back and forth about, well, which side do you want? Are you in favor of states' rights, or are you in favor of the federal government having the final say in these matters?
So this administration, this Republican administration, you know, would rather have the states' rights unless they argue with what they want, and then they'll bring the federal government into it.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, the Bush administration lawyer testified before the Supreme Court and you know, said, look, you know, you might encourage people to use marijuana if they sided with these women that brought the suit.
Big government if it serves them.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So give us a call. Where do you stand on this? 866-303-2270. Let's talk about pot. It's 13 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, your daily wake-up call to arms on Air America Radio.
Until recently, men have had only two options to improve their performance in the bedroom. Take a prescription drug that works quickly but only lasts for a few hours, or take a natural supplement that can take up to 4 weeks to work. But now there's a new option. In a recent medically supervised anecdotal study, over 96% of the participants who took Proton Extreme reported an increase in libido and erectile strength. Each participant was given a one-week supply. Some of the younger men had a response in just a few hours, others in just a few days. Regardless of your age, if you want to boost your libido quickly and naturally, then take the Proton test yourself. Results are guaranteed.
Call now for your risk-free supply. 1-800-399-6763. That's 1-800-399-6763. 9 out of 10 men have success with Proton. Now it's your turn. Call 1-800-399-6763. Again, 1-800-399-6763.
It was the single largest loss of life from an enemy attack on American soil. It was also the biggest intelligence failure in the history of the United States. Critics are calling it one of the most important documents of the modern era, a must for anyone who wants to know the truth about 9/11, a riveting read that will alter the course of history. Could 9/11 have been prevented? For the first time, access documents, interviews, transcripts, and previously unreleased material. Learn why the highest levels of government ignored repeated warnings by the head of counterterrorism, how a presidential memo warning of terrorist hijackings went unheeded just 2 months before the attack. You've heard the rumors, now get the facts. Call us right now.
Toll free. 1-800-590-3488. Get the facts you deserve to know. 1-800-590-3488. The 9/11 Commission report you must have. Call us today. 1-800-590-3488. That's 1-800-590-3488.
It's Loud. The NBA on Sirius. For game time, log on to Sirius.com or call 877-33-SIRIUS.
Are you significant? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. The dictionary defines significant as someone who is noteworthy, valuable, or important. In our culture, we determine our significance by what we have, what we do for a living, and by comparing ourselves to others. But none of these are really good definitions. We should not look at outward signs and appearances to determine our significance. Instead, we should look at our hearts. An ancient proverb says, "As a person thinks in his heart, so is he." Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find some great resources for strengthening your family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net. Or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad.
Where do you go?
When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Where do you go? Where are you?
Wash off the blackboard. Put away the books. Take down the posters.
Put away the gym balls.
Empty out our desks.
Scrape our names off the lockers.
Pull our drawings off the walls.
Put it all in the garbage.
Throw it away.
Throw it all away.
AIDS has killed more children worldwide than there are in all the grade schools in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, Atlanta, and Miami combined. The time to do something is now. The place is apathyislethal.org. AIDS is preventable. apathy is lethal.
A public service announcement brought to you by the United Nations Foundation and the Ad Council.
Past the hour, I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We are now talking about pot, which is a nice way to come down from the Michael Ware segment from the last hour, which was mind-blowing in all other ways. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270. Right now, we had a guy named Sir James in a Navy blazer with a crest on it.
That's right. Don't call me Jim.
Yeah. Drop off George W. Bush's schedule for today from the Palm Pilot. Here's the President's Sketch. 6 a.m., wake up, prepare for trip to Canada. Note, it will be chilly up there, and the weather could be cold, too. 8 a.m., Greek dignitaries. Note, assure Canadians that the only reason I picked Mexico as the first country I visited as president was because I speak their language, and Canadian is so difficult. 10 a.m., discuss security along the U.S.-Canada border. Inform them that on a clear day, we can hear their French-inflected heckling as far south as Wyoming. 11 a.m., discuss war on terror. No, tell Canadians, if they send troops to Iraq, they can have Maine. Yeah. 12 a.m., discuss trade issues. Tell the officials that we keep supplying Canada with M&M CDs, but it's been several years since they sent us a new album from Loverboy, and they can have back Nickelback. Yeah. 1 p.m., impromptu visit with average Canadians. Note, tell people shoveling their walk that everyone used to... Tell people shoveling their walk that everyone used to call me the snowblower. Yeah. Meet with Canadians at 4 p.m. Meet with Canadian Film Commission. Suggest that Toronto be used as stand-in for New York in real life. That made more sense to me this time. 10 p.m. bedtime. Take cheap local prescription sweet pay to dry them out protesters. Now we're going to take your calls. Hold on.
Uh-oh.
Michael, listening to WLIB in Connecticut. How are you?
Hey, Michael.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
What's going on, man?
All right, I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Good. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say that most of the negative side effects from marijuana are caused purely by smoking it. If you vaporize it or use it in food, it's completely healthy for you.
Healthy? You mean not dangerous?
That's right.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you very much.
All right.
Yeah, he's right. Yeah, I mean, that's the same with cigarettes. Most of the cancer-causing thing is from the heat.
But so, now, does it help with the symptoms if you take it that way?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I think that the effect is the same. If you eat pot, if pot brownies are made correctly, listen to me. Man.
How would you know, Mark Maron?
If you saute those buds and butter. All right, here we go. Who we got here? We got Rob in Boston. How are you, Rob? We're coming up there Friday.
Hey, how are you doing, guys?
Good. All right.
Hey, I just wanted to say my son actually passed away of cancer earlier this year.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
While he was in treatment, the chemotherapy makes people very, very nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the medications that he was prescribed is something called Marinol,
mm-hmm.
which is a pill form of THC.
Mm.
And it's done in such a way it doesn't make you high, but it's intended to relieve the nausea as smoking marijuana can. But what was interesting is he was being tutored by his science teacher when he couldn't go to school, and they were studying how food is absorbed into the body.
Mm-hmm.
And he figured out, and the science teacher confirmed it, that if he was smoking it, that the effect of Marinol would be much greater as opposed to taking the pill.
Mm.
Your body doesn't absorb it. It's not an effective way to get the drug into your system.
Okay. That was an interesting way to come about that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that story with us, Bob.
I really appreciate it,
Bob.
Hope to see you up in Boston. We're going to be in Somerville. Right?
Yeah. You guys get up way too early for me.
Okay. Well, we got you this time.
We got you this time.
Your call.
Take care.
A sad but interesting story that was.
Yeah.
That actually became a science project to figure out how the best release system for THC would be.
Yeah. Which, by the way, for those of you who do not know, is the active ingredient in marijuana.
Scott in Virginia, how are you, Scott? What's going on?
Hey, Mark and Mark.
How you doing?
Really love the show, guys.
Thanks a lot.
I, for one, and I haven't heard anybody else say this, am against the whole medical marijuana front and the hemp front, because I think it obscures the just downright legalization of marijuana, the decriminalization of it. I think it gets in the way of the message, and it really makes it a soft soap issue. We should be facing the issue head on and let the truths come out about the benefits and the drawbacks all as one package.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, you know, just like almost like a flat tax. You just like, let's just get it out in the open and make it
and
what
either
it
make
is.
It legal or illegal, not medical or non-medical.
Right.
Well, if you make it a medical issue or a manufacturing issue, it allows them to focus on why it shouldn't. They shouldn't legalize it for that reason.
And we can
make it
an
issue that the criminalization of it is so absurd on its face. Then you can address that. Pure and simple.
Right.
But you know what, Scott? They're opposing it, and certainly the Supreme Court justices that are debating this issue, and they did so yesterday, are saying that it could lead to an increase in recreational use.
Well, that's fine, yeah, and that's what I'm getting at, is recreational use shouldn't be controlled either. If you want to look at marijuana as a gateway drug, I bet everyone that says that marijuana was the first hard illegal drug they used, we'll also say that alcohol was the first legal drug they used.
Yeah. Yeah.
True.
It's just as much of a gateway as marijuana might be, even more so possibly, because somebody who becomes an alcoholic is that much more susceptible to other drug use.
Right.
Important.
You know, they're the ones robbing your drug cabinet for barbiturates.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, when they're high, you know, and they're, you know, drunk. I mean, I get what you're saying, and I guess so. If everything, if all pot is legalized, all marijuana is legalized, then we still have the you'll still have to try and get hold of the medical grade marijuana.
And yeah. we can also forthrightly address the drawbacks of it.
Right.
There definitely are psychological down things for it. It's very subtle.
Yeah.
And
does that even have to do with speech?
Yeah.
Thanks for your
talk. Smoking marijuana, don't mix, so I'm perfectly clean, but I have
There you go.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Scott.
Take it easy.
Wow.
Okay, I couldn't help myself. I hope,
yep.
I hope
down that slippery slope.
Yeah, Chris, listening to LIB in Brooklyn. How are you, Chris?
Hey, Chris.
How you doing?
All right.
Good morning.
What's up, man?
Well, I used to be the official drug tester for New York City employees, and what a lot of people don't know in the five boroughs is that before a drug testing program was instituted, you had a lot of accidents in DOT, Parks and Rec, DEP, school safety.
Right.
People were running over old ladies and dragging them for like 50 feet. People were smashing cars into embankments. And after the drug testing was implemented, you know, a lot of lives were saved and people, you know, were prevented from doing these like horrible accidents. And pot was one of the number one drugs on the top of the list for people to use. And
wait a minute. Now, let me get this straight, Chris. You're saying that... did they drug test the people that were involved in all of these crashes and situations?
What you had is you had drug tests for the accidents. You had reasonable suspicion if the manager thought you were high. You had pre-employment testing. You had crash accident testing. So you had all different kinds of tests that were administered. And this is like across the board for the whole city.
I'll tell you something, Chris. It just took me this long to realize that you weren't actually doing the drugs testing.
I really think that.
Like I'm sitting here listening, I'm like, wow, that must be an interesting job to have.
Official NYC drug tester.
You, Chris, sitting in the room going, yeah, this stuff is good.
Hey, Chris, what percentage of the people you tested positive?
I would say... you know, less than 20%, you know, because I was joining up on the crew after the program had been initiated for a while. So
yeah.
You didn't find a lot, that many positives. But, you know, before the drug testing, man, MTA, like the trained people, they were all drinking alcohol.
Yeah, a lot of booze, right?
Booze every day. The whole crew had to drink or else they wouldn't let you on site. And those days are over.
Long Whoa, time. And they're charging $2 a pop?
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, Chris.
Thanks a lot, man. The transit people are going to love that.
That was just interesting. I kept thinking, like, he's the drug tester. It's like, a drug tester needs a day off. He, you know, he worked too hard yesterday.
Yeah, right?
He wasted.
I don't understand, though. I mean, does that mean that, you know, the New York, maybe we shouldn't be riding buses and riding subways in New York because the people are either high or drunk? Is that what he was trying to say?
Dude, I don't know. You got to take your chances in life.
Yeah, you sure do.
Yeah.
What do you mean, do? Coming up after the break.
Darlene Love.
Darlene Love.
That'd be nice to talk to her.
The great, legendary singer Darlene Love.
Cool.
Will be joining us here on Air America Radio. 30 pounds in 30 days? Or how about eat whatever you want and still lose weight? Look, you and I both know that is not going to happen. I'm Dr. Greg Cinnamone, and I'd probably be the first to sign up for that magic pill that makes diet and exercise irrelevant. But until that day, I'm content to be one of 100,000 plus folks who haven't just ordered CortiSlim once. They've ordered CortiSlim again. So many people have found that CortiSlim is part of an absolutely brilliant lifestyle of managing daily stress. Why? Because stress leads to problems, like gaining weight. We believe that good health involves diet, exercise, supplementation, and CortiSlim. And I want you to have Dr. Talbot's Total Sense program free with your order. Look, the holidays are here, and stress and overeating is a problem. This is your chance to step off that scale and into the CortiSlim lifestyle. Call 1-800-921-BURN. 800-921-BURN. 800-921-BURN.
It's live. The NBA's on Sirius. For game time, log on to Sirius.com or call 877-33-SIRIUS.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tony Cantillo, your fresh grocer. And your tip for the day is going to be on yellow papayas. There's some great price on these papayas out there, but let's talk about selection. When you select them, what you want to do simple is make sure you have a nice yellow color all the way around, a bright yellow color. And the bigger they are, the better they're going to be, because they're going to have, believe it or not, a smaller cavity inside there, which is a good thing. Then what you want to do is make sure, oh, a little bit of green on top to bottom, that's okay, but not too much. When you bring them home, store them on the counter. That is so important. Don't put them in the refrigerator. If you put them in the refrigerator, it will shrivel up on you and not taste any good. Store them on the counter. When they're ready to eat, they should be fully yellow all the way around and give out a wonderful aroma. Now, not only do they taste good, but they are loaded with vitamins and minerals. They're great for us. Papayas. Go out and enjoy them. The prices are right. And I'm Tony Tantillo, your fresh grocer, and this is your tip for the day. Hello, I'm Tony Tantillo. You know, sometimes information on nutrition and health can seem overwhelming. That's why there's the Dole Nutrition News. Twice a month, this electronic newsletter will bring you the very latest in diet and nutrition research, plus recipes, fitness tips, and natural beauty ideas. Best of all, it's absolutely free. How to get all this information? Simply just go to www.dolenutrition.com. To sign up, it's free, it's easy, and it's loaded with news that you can use to lose weight and look great. Again, that's www.dolenutrition.com.
A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. TV personality Luke Perry.
All right, I got a little pop quiz for you. It's about me. What was my zip code? What city was it in? Name three kids I hung out with in the lunchroom. Name three kids your child hangs out with in the lunchroom.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school and know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
If you think of a library as that place where shh is the only thing you hear, think again. Many are being forced to cut back hours, reduce services, even close their doors. The time to support your local library is now. Contact your library to find out how you can help keep the doors open. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. For more info, visit the American Library Association at www.ala.org.
Hello, this is Alex Trebek for Choice Magazine Listening, a free service of the nonprofit Lucerna Fund. If you're unable to read because of blindness or other handicap, Choice Magazine Listening will send you on four-track cassettes selections from leading magazines. So for 8 hours of memorable writing every other month, completely free of charge, write Listening, Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050, or call 516-883-8280. Thank you.
You love the game. You love your team. And you love your friends and family. So to get home safely, you hand off your keys to a sober designated driver. America's all-star team of sports leagues, stadium service partners, brewers, broadcasters, and traffic safety experts thank the sober designated drivers who make sure you buckle up and get home safely. For more information on techniques for effective alcohol management, visit www.teamcoalition.org.
Past the hour, this morning's edition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Now I'm going back to my womb-like state now, because this is one of those songs I came up with.
That's your song, that's the laugh you hear is Darlene Love, that is her song.
The great Darlene Love.
Good yes. morning.
Good morning.
That she recorded, she ghost recorded for the Crystals.
Yes.
Now
yes.
Ghost recorded, that's not something we hear anymore. What does that mean exactly?
Well, it's that Phil Spector moved to California and he met me and he asked me to come into the studio. I rehearsed and learned the song He's a Rebel and recorded it under the name of the Crystals.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
So now, Phil Spector then was a genius. Did you feel
he was?
That?
I still feel he is today.
Yes.
He paved the way for a lot of this going on now because we did everything that people are doing today with 100 tracks.
Oh, right.
Three tracks.
That's unbelievable. So they layered it.
Yep. Exactly.
Now, you were a church singer, gospel singer, right?
My father was a preacher.
Ah, there you go.
And I grew up in church.
Now, did you get a lot of flack when you decided to start singing secular music, singing with a guy who was, what, around your age, only slightly older than you?
Matter of fact, I got a lot of flack from the members of the church more so than my father, because my father said, we were doing a television show called Shindig back in
1955. Oh, yeah.
And he told them, well, how you know she's watching? How you know she's on the show? Unless you're watching it. So it's all right for you to watch it, but for her not to be on the show. So he kind of like, you know, stomped it cold, you know.
Yeah.
Don't turn on the radio and listen to this thing if it's offending you.
What was it like the first time you heard yourself on the radio?
It was amazing for me and people that knew it was me singing He's a Rebel.
What was it like just now to hear it?
Funny. Sound like Mickey Mouse.
No, but you know what? Those piano chords at the beginning are like a signature piece of rock and roll.
Exactly.
You know, that dun, 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 dun. I mean, you know right away what that song is.
It's amazing. And you did do Run Run.
They do Run Run. Run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's sure the boy I love.
Yeah. Now you're here doing a show. We should talk about the show.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm doing a show for the first time at the Apollo.
Wow.
I actually worked the Apollo 40 years ago.
Wow.
Really?
This year.
Yeah.
I was with Bobby Sox and the Blue Jeans, and we appeared there as Bobby Sox and the Blue Jeans in 1964.
Really?
Now here I am 40 years later going back into the Apollo as Darlene Love and doing my Christmas show.
See, that's the thing that always kind of mystified me about how Phil Spector worked, because it was almost as though the singers, although very distinct, were kind of like interchangeable parts. You recorded as Bobby Sox, you recorded as Darlene Love, you recorded as a member of the Crystals. But now, how come the Ronettes managed to seemingly stay intact, and he shifted the Crystals and these other groups around so much?
Because the Ronettes came to California and recorded. The Crystals did not.
Oh, okay.
And Bobby Sox and the Blue Jeans lived in California. The group was actually made up of a group called the Blossoms.
Okay.
And we met Bobby Sheen, who became Bobby Sox of Bobby Sox and the Blue Jeans. But the Blossoms actually did all the recording for the Crystals. We did all the background for the Ronettes, most of the background, and of course for Darlene Love. And it was just all interchangeable. Matter of fact, there was a time when everybody thought that Darlene Love was singing everything. But they didn't know. Yeah, but they didn't even know who she was. They thought maybe it was a member of the Crystals or a member of the Ronettes. But it wasn't me, a real person.
How did you keep track of royalties? Or did
what royalties? That's how we kept track of. We didn't get any.
Really?
No.
Spector kept all the money?
He kept it all.
It's so hard to believe that. There was a time.
I love him.
It's so hard to believe there was a time where it wasn't completely personality-driven. Because, I mean, now the entire music industry is personality-driven.
Right. I think Phil Spector was doing that, too. He was trying to build build himself, not his singing.
Just him. Like, I am the master genius of all
things.
I'm
the man in the middle of the circus.
Wow.
I cracked the whip. Yes.
When you recorded, did you hear all of the symphonic stuff and that wall of sound in the background in your head? Or did that come, did you kind of like record a track and then you heard it as a finished product?
I heard it as a finished product, but Phil Spector started using echo. They had an echo chamber in the studio at Gold Star, and okay. Phil Spector was the first person to start using echo.
Yeah.
Some kind of way he did it, but we did layer, which nobody was doing at the time, because usually when we recorded back in the late 50s and the early 60s, Everybody was thrown in the studio at the same time. All the musicians, the background singers, and the lead singer, and everybody recorded at the same time.
So you had like 100 people in there?
Yeah, sometimes.
Unbelievable.
Take a number, please.
Unbelievable.
Exactly, yeah.
There's a lot of people, from what I've read about Phil Spector, that were in the studio that went on to have, wasn't Sonny Bono there?
Sonny Bono used to work for Phil Spector. And
yeah.
I met Cher when she was 16 years old.
Uh-huh.
She was Sonny's girlfriend at
right.
the time.
She wasn't singing at
nope,
all.
Nope, she wasn't
She was just
singing
hanging around chewing gum?
Hanging out. Her bangs used to be long and down past her eyes, and she used to have long, straight hair.
And what do you think of pop music now?
What is pop music? What's pop music? Pop.
What do you like? I guess I'm referring to people like Britney Spears. And like,
yeah.
I mean, do you think it has any integrity whatsoever? Because I can't listen to it. Maybe
I think if they didn't take their clothes off, they'd be...
Well,
nobody would pay any attention.
Hey, but they got software that can make Britney Spears sound like Darlene Love.
That's
they
like,
can do anything they want now.
It's
with
cheating.
The music, with
Don't you think it's cheating?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because then when you see them in public, you know, I won't call any names, but I know people who work on the stage that they have singers that sing exactly what they're singing
really?
While they're
right.
on stage.
Now,
that's a good thing.
I'm telling you. Well, to help them get through the show.
Well, I mean, oh, I'm saying what I'm you're saying.
I'm saying like what
you
I'm singing.
Somebody.
Like I'm singing, he's a rebel.
Right.
And somebody's singing exactly word for word what I'm singing.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. So it's not a tape. There's actually somebody
no.
standing there.
Standing behind, yeah.
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
And they look like a background singer, so nobody
right.
knows
that's
the difference.
That's how they do it?
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Exactly.
But now, what did you do? You, at a point, began recording with people other than Phil Spector. You
right.
recorded with the Beach Boys.
Well, see,
Dan Pashman's favorite group.
That's what I did for a living before I met Phil Spector.
Really?
I was a background singer.
Oh, wow.
And I sung for the Mamas and the Papas, Johnny Rivers, Jan and Dean.
Which songs?
You name them.
All of them?
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, I guess, singers could make a really good living back then.
We
right?
did. I don't know how,
day.
Why I ever left. Sometimes I wonder.
We did a few movies, too, right?
I played Danny Glover's
right.
wife in all the Lethal Weapon movies. Right.
Now, how did that happen? I mean,
living here in New York. I tell you, I love New York. The casting director was a Darlene Love fan, and he used to come to the Bottom Line to see me all the time. And he called my office one day and asked me if I'd be interested in being in a movie with Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. I said, who wouldn't?
Yeah, right?
There was no, hold on, let me check.
What do you want me to do? When do we start? And actually, my audition was with Dick Donner, the director,
awesome.
And I just sat and talked with him for an hour. And he said, well, as far as I'm concerned, you have the part. Of course, I didn't believe that, being in show business.
I understand. How do you take care of your instrument? I mean, a lot of singers have rituals and routines that they go through. They want tea or a particular kind of tea or a particular kind of honey. What do you do?
Anything warm. And when I'm working, mostly, like I did a show at Rainbow and Stars.
Oh, sure.
For 3 years, I did my Christmas show there, and it's 10 shows a week. You're off on Sundays and Monday, which I do nothing. I don't talk. I don't
answer
anything.
The phone?
No, don't
really?
Answer the phone. My friends that know how my schedule is, they know I'm on voice rest. I don't talk. I drink a lot of hot stuff. I drink about 8 to 12 glasses of water a day.
Oh, okay.
I get my sleep at night when I can. And the biggest thing is talking.
Just don't talk.
My husband loves it.
You're going to ask me to substitute for Mara, but I guess that's out. Huh? But, one thing I have to say, I generally hate Christmas music. For whatever reason, I just don't listen. It sounds maudlin. It sounds. But
okay.
Christmas Baby Please Come Home was the one Christmas song that I always loved. I could always tolerate that because it had this kind of, I don't know, it was, first of all, it was identifiably Phil Spector because
yes.
it had that sound
and
in the
everything,
background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, That has been an enduring song for you, and there was some difficulty in you singing it at a point?
No, not Christmas Baby. River
okay.
Deep was the record.
Oh, River Deep?
River Deep,
he
Mountain
was,
High, because I heard it first, and I thought it was for me,
mm-hmm.
and he said he wasn't sure who he was going to give it to, and then Tina ended up singing it.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. So did,
but Christmas Baby Please Come Home was actually written for me.
No, that wasn't. He did.
Yes.
Okay. He
yes.
had that written for you.
And I still love that song today because it sounds just as fresh.
Yeah.
As it did when it was recorded over 40 years ago.
Letterman loves it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm on his TV show every year.
Now, was there any fighting? I mean, like amongst the talent? Like,
no,
like,
you know why?
Tina Turner.
But
I mean,
it wasn't with Tina. It
okay.
was with Phil.
All right, so
oh,
it
okay.
went through Phil.
But there was never any fighting among the groups. I was the oldest. everybody else, I was like 18, 19. Everybody else was like 12, 13, 14. So I was like the mama. You know, so I would walk in the studio. Plus, I was already a professional singer by doing background singer with some of the greatest that, you know, ever. I mean, I did Elvis Presley's 1968 comeback special.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
I worked with Frank Sinatra.
That's the one where he's wearing the black leather jacket.
Yes.
I saw
that.
You're
in the round in the circle.
Right, with the little,
right.
You're on that show?
I'm actually on it. He does a gospel segment.
Right,
right. Coming down on the three blossoms are surrounding him.
Oh, I got to get the tape.
And I also did Change of Habit with him.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Nice guy.
Oh, unbelievable.
Really?
Unbelievable.
Had a real magnetism.
He really did. He really did have a magnetism.
We'll talk about it more when we come back. It's 44 past the hour. We're talking to Darlene Love. We'll be back. Maybe we'll take a call or two. 866-303-2270 if you got a question. It's 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Call 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Is that bald spot getting bigger? Is your hair looking thinner? Why aren't you using Avacor, the hair growth treatment that has helped thousands of people just like you regrow their hair?
I am 39 years old. I've been slowly balding over the last 10 years. Thanks to Avacor, my hair is coming back and I couldn't be more excited.
The best product that I've tried.
Avacor is the product of the 21st century.
If you're losing your hair and haven't tried Avacor yet, how about a free month supply? We're giving away a free month of Avacor with all of today's orders. Avacor is proven to successfully stop hair loss and regrow hair.
Call 800-344-0089 for your risk-free trial of Avacor. Call now, 800-344-0089. That's 800-344-0089. And remember, all of today's orders will receive an additional month's supply of Avacor absolutely free. Call 800-344-0089.
Are you sick and tired of paying outrageous taxes each year? 2004 is almost over. You don't have to be a business owner to save thousands of dollars on your 04 taxes starting now. Check out Incorporating You. Find out how easy it is to incorporate. Getting started is as easy as a phone call to 800-924-4977. Incorporating is the true secret to financial success.
Hi, this is Ray Reynolds. I've designed the blueprint of success that thousands of entrepreneurs, investors, and business professionals use to save money on taxes, protect their assets, even start a whole new credit file. I will show you how to get $25,000 to $1 million in corporate credit, regardless of your credit history.
Don't wait. Take advantage of this year-end tax special. Call Incorporating You today at 1-800-924-4977. And for only $199, be on your way to 04 tax savings and qualify for $25,000 in corporate credit. Don't give it up to the IRS again this year. Call Incorporating You now at 1-800-924-4977. That's 1-800-924-4977.
From across the big pond and the land that brought us warm beer, cucumber sandwiches, and mush peas comes all the excitement of the world's most popular sport. It's Barclay Premiership English Football, every Saturday on Sirius. No need to hit the pub to catch your team when you can now act like a true hooligan in the comfort of your home or car. Barclay Premiership English Football. Only on Sirius Sports Byline USA 122.
Tally-ho.
A pop quiz for parents with third grade teacher, Mr. Bonner.
Today's quiz will test your general knowledge. 1. Name one Hollywood director. 2. Name one actor from a TV sitcom. Number 3. Name one comedian. 4. Name one game show host. 5. Name one professional athlete. Number 6. Name one reality TV show. And one more question worth 100 points. Name one teacher you've met visiting your kid's school.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Close your eyes and imagine you're on an unspoiled beach. Sunlight streaming through the palm leaves. A paradise like this isn't easy to come by. But it does still exist, because the Nature Conservancy works locally to save precious places around the world forever. That way, closing your eyes will never be the only way to get there. Help save the last great places. Visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org.
Sirius.
Sirius.
Entertainment that transforms your ride.
Sirius.
Finally, quit smoking, that they'll buy your next two cartons for you if you don't quit. Never again will you have smoke-filled clothes, bad breath, or jeopardize the health of your loved ones. Just listen to these ex-smokers.
I've been smoking a carton of cigarettes per week as long as I can remember. The very first day I started the smoke-free M3 system, I quit.
This is Shelly, and my cravings have decreased. I'm calmer, less irritable, and I've been smoke-free for a month now.
This system really surprised me on how effectively and quickly it worked.
Smoke-free M3 is strong against cravings mentally and physically, so you can stop for good. No stress, no jitters, no anxiety, and no more money wasted on cigarettes.
Call now for your trial of smoke-free in 3 at 1-800-304-1766. Stop smoking in just days, guaranteed. 800-304-1766. If you don't stop, we'll send you $100 to buy your next two cartons. Call 1-800-304-1766. That's 1-800-304-1766.
Past the hour, Mark Manager, Mark Riley.
They do run.
I can't believe it's you. That's
yay.
It's just making me cry a little bit. It's very exciting. Your show is Love at the Apollo for Christmas. It's one night only. It's December 4th.
Yes.
Are there still tickets available or
no? Still tickets available.
Oh, you got to go.
You got to go. I mean, just to see Paul Schaefer.
Oh, is he going to
Steve Van Zandt.
Oh, everybody's
Cynthia
coming
Houston,
out. Oh, my God.
Danny King.
Uh-oh.
Yes. I mean, we're having a party.
It sounds like it.
Wow. Now, we got somebody on the phone that says they're a longtime Crystal fan.
Okay.
Hey, John, what's going on in St. Paul, Minnesota?
Hey, John.
Hey, listen, this is the best birthday present I could ever ask for today. Thank you. Darlene,
today's your birthday?
Yes.
Happy birthday to you.
There you go.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm a big 55 today. I've been a Crystals fan since I was 13. He gets up in the morning and he goes downtown.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's his boss and his boss and his boss. Okay, well, that's enough for me.
All right.
Good job.
All right, John.
Happy birthday, buddy.
Happy birthday, man.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care.
See you later.
See, he's one of those. He's just like me that way. You know? You couldn't have known at the time that this music was going to be this timeless.
Oh, never. Never. I never thought. Matter of fact, we called it bubblegum music.
Really? You just like if I was going to go away, it didn't be made
and it wouldn't. But, you know, and then I've met a lot of entertainers like Elton John or, you know, like a Sting who say this music, as far as they're concerned, started rock and roll.
Really?
The Boss, I mean, you know, and Steve Van Zandt, all of these people credit me and Phil Spector with starting the real rock and roll.
Right, it's funny because Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, who's our producer, associate producer, he credits Bruce Springsteen as starting everything. He thinks Bruce Springsteen started time itself.
Music.
There was nothing but a dark void before Springsteen.
That, right?
Yeah.
It kind of gives us a little credit.
Yeah, right?
So tell us a little bit about Elvis, because, you know, everybody, you know, is he's sort of a mystical figure, great charismatic.
Elvis was so nice. When we started doing his 1968 comeback special, because he knew my affiliation with gospel music, he used to go get his guitar, and we used to sit and sing for hours.
Really?
Just gospel music. And then he would go, do you know this one? He'd start playing it. We'd all start singing it. It was
really
fun.
And he knew all the songs and everything?
He knew the songs. He said he learned gospel music from going to black churches in the South, listening to them at the window.
Wow.
He couldn't go in the church.
Really?
But he would stand outside and listen.
Bill Clinton said that too, I think.
Leave Bill alone.
No, he's our guy. Believe me, he is our guy.
I know he is.
You actually did some campaigning this year, didn't you?
Yes, I did some campaigning, yeah.
We all tried.
We tried.
Yeah, but you
know what I want to say? Please explain to me
how
you got all those people to register and then they didn't go and vote.
That's a weird thing,
right?
What
happened?
Well, a lot more people went to vote, but I mean, there was still...
But you know what they did? They did a thing, and they went. They said 20% voted last year, and 20% voted again.
Well, I'll tell you what happened is that in certain precincts, you know, especially in black neighborhoods, the lines were just too long because they didn't staff them correctly,
yeah.
And a lot of people went home. I bet that was part of the big scam.
They didn't do the roadblock thing like they did in Florida 4 years ago, where they had the cops stopping people, saying, "Wait a minute, no, the polls are back this way.
Yeah,
or, come vote tomorrow."
Right. Instead, they just had one machine in a neighborhood for 50,000
people.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
Right. Yes, matter of fact, there may still be people online.
Well, actually, there is a march in Ohio.
Yes.
This Saturday, December 4th at 1 p.m. at the Ohio State House in Columbus, Ohio, to ensure that every vote is counted, go to our links at morningsedition.com for details.
Yeah, the Reverend Jesse Jackson's out there.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he's going out
there.
We didn't
hear a lot from him this year.
I know.
What
he calls here occasionally.
He calls here.
Okay.
Yeah. He's going out on the road, you know, he and Reverend Al and, you know, the activist crew.
Oh, Lord. Well, we did a lot of work with Bruce Springsteen this year.
Really?
You know, for the Democrat convention.
Now, your phone rings a lot, I bet you, huh? People calling, asking, you know, are you free? How do you pick and choose what gigs to do?
Ones that pay the most. No, I'm only kidding.
Well, that's a good question.
I do a lot of benefits. And during Christmas time, I do a lot of children charities, hospitals, and the whole thing.
What about the, like, when you were working with Spectrum, when it's notorious that so many artists got ripped off,
right.
You know, for so long in rock and roll. You know, and now, you know, if you play your cards right, you can really get protected and make a lot of money.
Right.
What was the feeling back then? That it was just the way it was?
Not so much it was the way it was. We had recording contracts.
Uh-huh.
But I've learned to live long enough to see recording contracts don't mean anything.
Okay.
Because we had a legitimate recording contract with Phil Spector.
Okay.
And he just didn't pay the royalty.
So you have no protection whatsoever?
None.
Wow.
And unless you want to go and find a lawyer that said, "I'm sorry, you have to give me $20,000 to fight this case before I even start." Where are we going to get $20,000 from?
And the case would be against Spector?
Yes.
Okay.
And I did eventually sue Spector. Sue Phil Spector about 7 years ago, and I won.
Oh, good.
Really?
Yeah.
You got the money?
I got the money.
Can I have some?
No. As long as it took me to get it.
I understand.
Still.
Believe me. I understand. So now, you're based here in New York.
I live in Rockland County.
Oh, fantastic.
And I've been in New York almost 20 years now. I came here to do a play called Leader of the Pack.
And the Shangri-La's song.
Yeah. And I stayed, and I've been here ever since.
Now, it's funny. The Shangri-La's were not produced by Phil Spector, but they did kind of have that sound behind
them. They did.
Leader of the Pack?
Yeah.
Because of the music.
Yeah.
You know, those same writers.
Oh, is that what it was?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the same writers.
The same producer, same writers.
See, I'm learning stuff here. This is the kind of stuff you'd have to go online to find out information.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing next Saturday? Not next Saturday, this Saturday.
This Saturday, I'll be in Seattle.
He'll be in Seattle. Okay. He's recording himself.
You guys are going to miss a great show Saturday at the Apollo.
Can we bootleg it? Can we get somebody? We'll have a great show. Say hi to all those people for us, even though they don't know us. And you won't do. But have a great show.
Thank
and please go. Let me give the date. That is Saturday night the 4th. Yes, it is at the Apollo. There's still tickets available. Darling Love and a cast of thousands.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been a real honor having you here.
Yeah. So now I guess we have the liberal agenda.
I hear it.
Here's the facts right now. So here's your marching orders for today from the Streisand compound. Write these down. 1. Lobby Supreme Court to classify being bummed as a disease treatable by medical marijuana. 2. To support gay pride, assure gay teenagers who saw Alexander that not all bisexual world conquerors were that boring. 3. Criticize Julia Roberts for contributing to world overpopulation, but praise her for contributing 2 more registered Democrats. There you go. 4. Buy U2 CD for Bono's work against third world debt, but try to ignore all the religious content. 5. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. You think it's a coincidence that Bush shows up in Canada the week I'm supposed to move there? Wake up, man. You're all being used. Darlene Love, thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Mark
thank
Riley.
You.
What do we got tomorrow?
Tomorrow we've got Amy Sond.
Oh, right? Yeah, Amy Sond.
Naked City College Amy Stone, Sond, I'm sorry, in New York Magazine. She's going to talk about her new book, My Old Man. And later this week, actor and playwright Eric Bogosian comes back and hangs out with us for a little
That'll
bit.
That'll be fun. That There's never a shortage of words there.
This has been an intense, fun day.
Big
I got to tell you. Big day.
It was wild.
Have a good one, Mary.
You too, Riley.
This is Air America Radio.